Good afternoon. It is Brian Noonan in for Rokan and Anna DeVlantes on Boxing Day, day after Christmas, or do you just prefer to call it Wednesday? Either way, we are here and happy to be here. I forgot because we are on CLTV. I just happened to look up, and as the theme is running, we're already on TV. So now I have to try to preen for the cameras. I went into radio because I didn't want to be in front of the camera, but we're doing that now, and we're happy that everybody's here. It should be a good day. We have a big show planned. We're going to talk to Tom Skilling a little bit earlier than usual today. We'll talk to him right after 3:30, and then Ryan Burrow will join us from ABC News to tell us a little bit about the retail situation leading up to the holidays and what you can expect now if you're going to be making those big exchanges. So we'll do all that with Ryan. We'll talk to Andy Fields and after 4 o'clock, also from ABC, to tell us what's going on with the government shutdown, the president's surprise visit to Iraq, and more from Washington. And we're going to give you a chance to go to the Winter Classic in South Bend, Indiana. We're not just going to do one question today. Tom Hush, who's executive producing the broadcast today, and if you do call the number 312-981-7200, you must be nice to him in order to get to me. Tom said, hey, let's bring back an arcade. Let's do a version, a Wednesday afternoon arcade, and make people go head-to-head, kind of like a Winter Classic Thunderdome. Two contestants will enter. One contestant will leave with hockey tickets. The other contestant will leave with their head hung in shame and maybe a prize if I'm feeling holiday-ish, which I should be. I should still be feeling holiday-ish. We'll do that. We'll do that at 5 o'clock, and we're going to talk to an Academy Award-winning composer after 6. We got a lot to do. In the meantime, I'll be joined by a wonderful, wonderful crew. Kim Gordon is here. Hello, Kim. How was your Chinese food?
My Chinese food was delicious.
Monday, if you were not with us on Christmas Eve, Kim and I had the same deal. I was having Chinese food at home. Kim was going out to Chinatown. Was Chinatown bustling on Monday night?
Bustling. First of all, you couldn't get a parking space on the street. I had to circle a parking lot probably 7-8 times, finally got a spot that I had to park behind a pole, so maneuvering was that's how bad it was.
Wow.
And there were lines out the door at all of the restaurants, and we had a 7 o'clock reservation, had to wait an hour, but I mean, it was
really
great. We had a good time. Everybody knew it was going to be crazy.
Well, sure, yeah. If you go out on Christmas Eve or Christmas, any holiday you go out, you're going to be waiting. So, well, I'm glad it worked out. I had the Chinese at home, so now I'm thinking maybe next year I venture into Chinatown.
It's really fun. It's such a festive atmosphere. It was great.
Very nice. David Jennings is handling traffic today. How are you, David?
I'm good. How are you?
I am fantastic.
Long time no see.
Yeah, really. It's good to see you. I'll be honest, this is the first time I've seen you in Traffic Central. It's very exciting for me.
This is the second or third time, Kim, I've done this.
Wow. That's pretty good. Very nice.
Yeah, they invited you back, so
yeah, you must have done all right.
Good job.
Must be doing something right.
Well, sure, you could look at it that way, which is the way I prefer to look at it, or you could look at it, it's the holidays, nobody else wants to work. So I'm going to take the first way, David. I'm going to say that you got it again because you're wonderful at it, which you are when you're doing the news as well. And the final piece of the puzzle, the king of the hot takes, the Archduke of sports, the man who is never at a loss for some sort of anecdote, Mark Carman is in sports today. Hi, Carm.
Brian, great to be here. And
I forgot to mention the guy who never sounds sincere, but go ahead.
Yes. I think that I just have a great, great feeling of working today, and then you just completely ruin it. Yeah, you're the one that's let through the door today because nobody else wants to be here.
That's not true at all. I could say the same about me, Carm. Come on. Rowan Ed aren't here, so Noonan will do it.
Right, I personalized it, though. You've got a greater sense of self going on over there.
I don't believe that to be true at all, unfortunately, which is surprising. So you were on the air last night, weren't you?
Harry did a team show? We did the Two Jewish Men and You Christmas show from 8 to 11 last night. Yes,
very
that was
nice.
A lot of fun. And but I did have beforehand, Brian, I was trying to have Chinese food, but it didn't work out for me, so I ended up having barbecue, which wasn't a terrible thing.
That's not a bad compromise.
Yeah.
I thought, though, you were contractually obligated to have Chinese food yesterday.
It does seem that way, but we looked around at the potential options, and we did not want to battle the Kim Gordon family in Chinatown.
No.
Well, let me tell you, I was not the only North Shore family in Chinatown. We walked into the restaurant, and we knew three other families.
Oh, the funny thing, Chinatown is crowded all the time. But Christmas Eve, and did you know, were places open there yesterday, Kim? I would imagine.
Oh, yeah, they were open, too. Yeah.
I called literally, I don't know, 5-6 Chinese restaurants saying, we want to come by, have dinner with us at WGN. We could have a sweet time. And that was not happening.
Like, no, they were busy yesterday. They had people coming in the door.
Right. I mean, I couldn't, if they were downstairs, I don't think they would have come up to see me and Harry last night, which I shouldn't personalize that either, right?
Good. Well, no, it's not. Yeah, it wasn't personal.
Yeah.
No. It wasn't just, oh, it's Carmen. No, we're not coming in. If it had been anybody else, we actually had the catering truck full, but then we heard it was Carmen. We're not going in.
Right.
That's not happening.
There were no cars on Wells Street last night except for the ones outside the Fireplace Inn. The Fireplace Inn was doing business, but that was about it.
Well, it's a night where there's a lot of people who are looking for something to do. So I'm old enough to remember this, Carm. Back in the day, nothing was open on Christmas Day. The first year we were married, we were driving home from Michigan, and nothing was open. We had to dine at a gas station. And by dine, I mean, oh, look, a bag of Doritos and a Slim Jim. Merry Christmas. But now things are open, and people can enjoy the day however they want to enjoy it.
That's I like the resourcefulness, though. Doritos, a Slim Jim, maybe a little Sprite, a Coca-Cola product. You're
sure.
Good.
Well, listen, back in the day, I didn't care what I put in my body.
Right.
You know that. So it was, all right, I'll eat whatever garbage they have at the gas station. I don't care.
It's also love, though, Brian. You guys are driving. Hey, this is the best we got, but we have each other.
Sure, yeah. We spin it that way. You know how many more times we did that? Go up to Michigan on Christmas Eve, drive home on Christmas? Never. That was the one time. Yeah, one Christmas afternoon eating at a gas station, you go, you know what? We'll find a different time to visit.
Uh-huh.
You know, but we do have each other. All right, we got a lot to get to today. So we are going to do that. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the president having a surprise visit to Iraq. If you have any thoughts, you're always welcome to chime in either on the phone 312-981-7200 or via text messaging, the same number. It's magic. I don't know how they do it. Social media, it's Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter. That's right, we come out of a technical gaffe with a little bit of the blues, and that's all right. Hopefully everybody had a nice holiday and are not too blue, but if you are, all experts say that is not unusual. And a lot of people are not always the happiest. A lot of people who are happy are the troops in Iraq because the president and the first lady paid a surprise visit to them. How'd you like that segue, Carm? That was top of the line. That was professional broadcaster segue right there. Not as professional when you point it out.
Never heard it done better, honestly, right there. Radio Hall of Fame, Brian Noonan.
Well, listen, you're always lobbying for a faculty position at some broadcast school. I'm teaching segues. It's a 2-credit course. You know, we meet once a month. You practice going from topic to topic.
That could be a path to greatness.
You think?
I teach segues. It's a very, very nuanced course.
Right. It's niche.
You don't start out in this course. You have to take the rudimentary classes first, and then you can get to me. Noonan.
Oh, yeah. This is a higher level course. This is a 400-level course.
Yeah.
This is not some, introduction to broadcasting course. You have to know what you're doing.
This is a 200, 300, even 400-level course.
That's what I'm thinking.
That's why the pay would be... Something similar to it would be towards that level,
here.
Brian.
Enough to not retire on. Anyway, the president and the first lady took a secret overnight flight. You've heard Kim reporting on this. Whether you're a supporter of the president or not, I know I have been very critical of the president at times. I have to look at this and say this is a great move. This is something, you're the commander in chief, and I think it's prudent that you go and visit the troops during the holidays. So while the president has sought to distance himself from foreign entanglements that were made by his predecessors, he did go over and visit the troops in Iraq. And listen, if you're I can only imagine, I have never served in the military, I've never been stationed overseas, but you are greeting your commander, so it has to be a very exciting time. The pictures coming out of Iraq, the service people around the president and the first lady look very excited, as they should be. Quite honestly, it's got to be very, I've never met a president, it's got to be very impressive to meet them. And especially if you are in the military and you are meeting your commander-in-chief, it's got to be great. I know people are going to say, well, he was shamed into doing it because General Mattis has resigned and then he's removed him early. And pulling the troops out of Syria is, according to all experts, a horrible idea. But he went. And at some point, the troops, either they don't care why he's there or they know. But you know what? It's their commander, so they're going to be happy about it.
He's a man of the people, Brian.
Well, I don't think that's the case at all. I think he's a man of some people. I think in order to be a man of the people, Carm, you have to be comfortable with everybody in all different economic stations. I don't quite believe that that is the president's nature. But it's the holidays. I'm gonna throw the guy a bone. Yes, he had to do it. We all know it. Because he's been criticized in the past for not visiting the troops, even when he is overseas. It was raining that day and he didn't go. We know all about that. We follow the stories. So, in the spirit of the holidays, I'm going to say, hey, good job, Mr. President. That was nice of you to go. Why you went? Well, we'll leave that out for now. You know, sometimes you just have to take the gesture at face value, and then we can dissect it at another point, which I think we will all do, because that's what we do.
They were killing him for not going yesterday. He was the first sitting president to not go on Christmas.
Right.
So,
well, especially after he made it, you know, the little violin, the boo-hoo, I'm in the White House all by myself and my family's in Florida. Because, quite frankly, most of us cannot empathize with that. Oh, I feel so bad that you had to work instead of going on vacation. We, you know, especially everybody who's working, no sympathy for that. And, as I said the other day, I think everybody in the legislature should have been at work yesterday. I don't think if you're a senator or a congressman, you, in good faith, you should have left your post in Washington to go flitting around for the holidays. You owe it to the American people to be back there getting this taken care of. You know, so again, in the spirit of the holidays, I will grant the president an attaboy for going.
I agree with you on the shutdown. Look, you all need to get in a room and figure it out. And when you figure it out, then you can leave and go home.
Exactly.
I totally agree.
Imagine if you're at work. Like, if we're here and we had a project, or if you're in a real business, not like this business, but you're in a real business where you have projects and you have deadlines, and you miss those deadlines. Your bosses don't just let you go. You know, they might let you go, but they're not letting you go home. And in point of fact, we are the bosses of everybody in Congress. So we need to stand up as one and say, listen, this is not acceptable. You need to get back to work right now. And we're not going to take another short-term kick the can down the road kind of thing. Well, this will get us going until mid-February. No. Get this figured out. And I know the Republicans are going to dig their heels in, and the Democrats are going to dig their heels in, saying, listen, we're going to have the House in a couple weeks. We're just hold on. And then things will get done. No. Things are going to be just as crazy as they were. All right, let's take a quick call on this before we go to news. John's been hanging on. Hi, John. John, turn your radio down. All right, we'll put John on hold. Tom, you can tell John we tried to talk to him, and that is it. Pardon me? Oh, okay. We'll talk to Larry. Hi, Larry.
Hey, good afternoon, Brian. Hey, Brian, quite often over the years I have somewhat disagreed with some of your political opinions, but that's neither here nor there. I would love to be in a position right now to shake your hand and say thank you for what you said about the president being over there and for telling them morons in Congress on both sides of the aisle to get back to work since we're paying them. They get paid. All the other worker bees don't get paid, so that's totally unfair for yourself. Thank you much for doing that.
Oh, well, Larry, you know, like I said, thank you for the call. Like I said, I've been very critical of the president. I am not his biggest fan. And I realize there's a lot of reasons why he went there. But you go and you gotta, you know, throw the guy a bone once in a while, and then we can dissect it all after. All right, we got to take a quick break. Then it'll be news time on WGN. After news, we will talk to Tom Skilling. Yes, a little bit earlier than normal, but listen, it's the holidays. Things are flexible. We are in flux on WGN. Brian Noonan in for Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantes. Bringing back some. We're getting all 80s today, leading up to our big guest at 6 o'clock. All right, I like it. The White Wedding, man, who disappointed a number of people yesterday because there was nothing white on their Christmas morning, but he's been working tirelessly to try to get to try to get your snow. Tom Skilling, Tom, I'm sure you got angry emails from people cursing because there was snow yesterday. I was not one of them. I was very excited.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Brian. And of course, you know that I have total control over all
of
this.
Of course.
So,
well, that's why people get mad at you, because we figure you have some sort of board in there with levers and switches, right?
Yeah.
You're like the great and powerful Oz behind the curtain. You're pulling levers and snow comes. And
How did you know, Brian? I tried to keep that secret, you know? You're absolutely right. You know, we've got a new software weather control package we've put in over here. Ooh. And if you believe that, I've got cheap land for you somewhere. So anyway, by the way, Merry Christmas and belatedly, Brian. Did you have a nice holiday?
I did. It was, it was very nice. Our daughter is home from New York. So that was very nice. And then we went to my brother's for dinner and saw my nieces, who are 6, 4, and 3, or 7, 5, and whatever.
They all
go completely nuts.
Yeah.
Because they're overwhelmed, overstimulated, and exactly what little kids should be on Christmas.
Absolutely. They're the ones for whom Christmas is produced.
Yes.
You know, we all have memories of our Christmas early.
You remember, Tom, one of your favorite things that you got as a kid? Was it a weather forecasting kit?
Do you know what? You know,
really?
I remember getting an anemometer one time. They had this weather station. It was put out by Lionel, the same folks who make the trains. And they did a weather station. That was really cool. Yeah, you know, one of the things though I remember, Brian, was they had these little stoplights that you could get, little mini stoplights.
Okay.
And you could set up like a, you know, with your little push cars that you rode around in, you could have a stoplight there, so you could turn the stoplight on and control the neighbors' movements in their little cars in your driveway, you know?
All right.
And I was just weird enough to find that kind of fascinating. And then another one, you know, I used to have this fascination with clocks.
Really?
And I remember they had these clocks that you could disassemble and then put together again, and that was really kind of cool.
So you've always had a kind of a scientific mind,
well,
right?
You know, maybe a kind of a screwed up mind, but I was kind of interested in these little gizmos and how they worked.
So would you, until you got one of those clocks for Christmas, would you drive your parents crazy taking things apart at the house and then, I still have an extra piece?
No. Thank goodness I didn't do that. I the dumbest thing I did as a kid was they used to have these Les Toil commercials where they showed that you could remove any spot on the wall and all this kind of stuff. I actually went into my mother's dresser and grabbed a lipstick. And I don't know, I was really a young kid, and I drew on the wall. And I thought, Les Toil will take this off.
Sure.
So I went to my mother. My mother walked in, and she was horrified to see this drawing on the wall. And she said, what were you doing? And I said, Mom, Les Toil will take that off. I saw it on the TV. And she said, no, dear, that's not going to happen. You know, I'm surprised I wasn't thrown out the window or something like that. I've got to hand it to my
mother. That was
mother.
Very good, because I don't know if I would have reacted as calmly as your mom did.
I don't think I would have. you know, had some a youngster done that to me. But I've had kind of an interesting childhood at times, but I guess every kid has probably done something stupid like that.
If there was a list of all the stupid things I did, we wouldn't have time to enumerate them before 7 o'clock.
I know. Although I find that hard to believe, Brian, because you're a very bright guy.
Well,
and I can't imagine you did anything.
I wasn't always this intelligent and erudite, Tom. I used to be sort of, stupid.
Oh, gosh. I find that hard to believe. By the way, Brian,
yes.
You know, some interesting stat, that temperature yesterday, the 45 degree high.
It was gorgeous.
Wasn't that something? That's the warmest Christmas we've had around here in 7 years. And we come back through the records, we found there are only 14 other Christmases in 148 years of weather records that were as warm or warmer than that.
Really?
And, of course, the warmest being, all of us will remember that 62-degree Christmas we had back in 1982. It was an El Nino year, and we were all... I remember, I saw
the stat yesterday when I was watching you, and I was trying to think back. I couldn't remember it offhand, but is this an El Nino year, or what is what's causing us to get this warm?
Well, we've got an El Nino coming, but I think there are a couple of things working here. For one thing, we've got a kind of a more westerly jet stream that's cut off the direct supply of Arctic air into our area. Now, it's buckling again, and this is going to spin up that storm that comes in tomorrow and ultimately deliver noticeably colder air later Friday and for the weekend. But even at that, those temperatures will be a little above normal. There's a more substantial cold spell coming perhaps later next week and the following weekend. But everything, you know, when you look out over the next 2 weeks, it's kind of a progressive pattern. So nothing parks over us and stays for a long period of time. The weather systems are kind of moving right along, which is good. That means you don't get into one of these Arctic outbreaks that ends up lasting, you know, weeks on end.
Under the dome or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, let me ask you this, Tom. With us having these warmer temperatures, is that a precursor for what we can expect the rest of the winter, or is this kind of just an anomaly and now we'll go back to normal?
Well, you know what? The thought all along has been the winter as a whole would come in above normal. Now, and we've qualified that very carefully and strenuously by saying that doesn't mean there aren't going to be snowstorms and it doesn't mean there won't be Arctic outbreaks. What it means, though, is that it's quite possible these won't stick around, that we'll have, you know, spells like we did back in November. That was a cold month around here, and it was our fourth snowiest November on the books. And here we go into December. We're in the 16th consecutive day of above normal temperatures, even though it may not have felt that way in the last week or so.
Right.
Because above normal temperatures at this time of the year can still feel pretty cool. But, you know, I would suspect we'll probably get a dump or two of relatively respectable Arctic air, but that it will be punctuated by milder spells as everything keeps moving along. Okay. So we'll see now if that works out. We do have an El Nino developing. It's kind of strange. The ocean is warmed along the equatorial Pacific, which you expect to happen in an El Nino. But the atmosphere has got to get in sync with that, and it's got to start producing thunderstorms out on the west end of the equatorial Pacific, and it's got to warm up, too. It hasn't done that yet.
Yeah, so I thought,
an El Nino going. It's not even a formal El Nino yet.
Don't those usually start earlier? Or am I mistaken?
No, you're true. You're right. You know, often those things start coming on in fall, and then it can take a couple of months. And, you know, we define an El Nino as the point at which there's been a 3-month period where ocean temperatures are at least a half a degree or more above normal. And we've not had that yet. The warm, but you've also got to get easterly winds that weaken along the equator, and that's the part that hasn't happened yet. We've had the warm ocean temperatures, but we haven't gotten the atmosphere to respond yet. And sometimes the atmosphere doesn't respond, and you never get the El Nino to kick in. But the climate forecasters are saying there's a 90% chance of that. And the reason that's important is because El Ninos tend to produce many of them above normal temperatures, though every one is a little different. But above normal temperatures occur in a majority of these things in our part of the world. So
now,
we'll see.
I would be remiss, Tom, before you gave us the forecast, people who were listening Monday heard you, and we, you know, it might have been a joke, but it might not, that you were going to be caroling with your producer and perhaps Demetrius and whoever else, roaming around the Bradley Place location,
yeah,
just singing songs. How did you celebrate Christmas? Did you actually sing to people, or was it a much more subdued celebration?
Well, we have a very musical weather office over here, Brian. We sing all the time. We have a very fractured brand of Christmas carol that we sing around here.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, like, do you hear what I hear? Then you're on the same medication I am, and you know, stuff like that. But and Silent Night, but Not in My Neighborhood, that's another one. But I, you know, we did a little bit of singing around
here,
but we had a great time.
All right, well, good.
How about, did you sing?
No, we sang happy my brother's birthday is tomorrow.
Oh.
And we sang to him, which is always the Noonans. We have a lot of talents. Singing is not one of them. And individually, we are not great. And as a group, we are even less great.
I hear you. So, I can identify with that. Totally.
But the sentiment was there.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the important thing, is it's what you put into it, you know, not necessarily what comes out.
A lot of gusto, Tom. Not a lot of great results. Can you give us a quick forecast of what's to come, please?
There'll be scattered showers. What you're going to notice is the wind's going to pick up. They'll be gusting from the southeast and south at about 30 miles an hour tomorrow, and that's going to propel the temperatures into the 50s, which is really quite warm. The highest reading tomorrow may actually occur tomorrow night, and it would be up around very possibly 57 degrees, which isn't a record, but it's quite mild, and it would be the warmest temperature of the month and the warmest temperature we've had around here since Halloween, October 31st. But then we start the day mild early Friday, and the colder air circulates in after that. So we'll get some scattered showers to develop tonight, turns into a steadier rain much of tomorrow amid these winds and the mild temperatures. And then we go showery again tomorrow night. The rain kind of turns off and on, and it might even be an isolated thunderstorm. And then those little spotty rain showers, lots of clouds, lots of wind. There could be 40-mile-an-hour gusts as the colder air comes in on Friday. And we might even get a couple of wet flakes of snow to mix in with the rain showers late in the day or at night. And then we'll have a flurry or two on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And Sunday could start with a flurry, but we hope for a little bit of sun, although there'll be another snow or rain system Monday night that we'll keep our eyes on.
Well, it's late December. This is what we're supposed to be getting, so
yeah.
We can't complain.
No, we've done pretty well. We're running over 4 degrees above normal for the month so far. That's bonus territory this time of the year.
Well, and I like that you took your vacation long ago, so you are here with us this week, and I will we'll talk to you again tomorrow. Is that correct?
That's right.
Very nice. I'm looking forward to it.
Look forward to it, Brian.
Thanks
good
again,
to talk
Tom.
To you.
Always
you
a bet. Pleasure. We'll talk to you later. Thanks. That's the great Tom Skilling. You hear him here every day with Rokan and Anna DeVlantes on WGN. We'll talk to Ryan Burrow about the retail sales and how they did over the holidays. We'll do that on the other side. Brian Noonan in for Rowan Anna. ABC News correspondent and WGN stalwart Ryan Burrow in studio with me. We talked the other day on Christmas Eve about people going last-minute shopping. Well, the good news for retailers over the holiday season, right? Things are up about 5%.
How about this? $850 billion spent between November 1st and Christmas Eve, according to MasterCard Spending Pulse, which tracks both online and in-store spending. That's up about 5% from the previous year. This excludes car sales, pretty much focuses on this holiday shopping period. Yeah. And, you know, they expected it to be up about 4%. It went up 5%. This includes online shopping. This includes in-store. And think about it this way. Yesterday, a lot of the stores were closed. They're back open today. And here we go again, right? Round two. Everyone's got gift cards they want to bring in. There are brand new sales that are out there. And, of course, everyone's got exchanges and returns.
Yeah, it used to be you would, you know, the Christmas spending would be over. Today would be, like you said, people are going back with their exchanges and stuff. But now, boy, the stores, like, they rebooted their sales immediately. Now it's the after Christmas sale, and you know your inbox is flooded with all these emails from retailers saying, hey, look, now you can really save.
They're trying to move the merch, to get it off the shelves.
Got to make room for that spring stuff
exactly.
Before that comes in. So are they, was there anything that talked about why? Why is it up? Is it consumer confidence always leads to more spending? So people are feeling good about the economy despite the last few days with the stock market taking its plunge. People must have a positive outlook, right?
That's what it seems like. And really, this kind of holiday, this kind of economic generation tends to come from lower middle and upper middle class. That's where we see most of the movement here.
Okay.
Where do those people fit? How do those people feel? And it looks as though the stock market slumping that we've seen, not today though,
today
up 1,000 points, and the looming and now underway government shutdown didn't really impact the way those lower middle class to upper middle class people kind of in that region feel about themselves, feel about their jobs. So good news, I guess.
Yeah, that's great news for the retailers. Was there a breakdown of how much came from online as opposed to brick and mortars? Because today you know, the malls are going to be packed again, but how much of that spending is really going on in the brick and mortar stores?
You know, we don't have a specific breakdown, and hopefully in the models that we'll be seeing in the coming days and weeks, they'll get a little clearer picture of that. I can tell you just from Amazon itself that it said it had a record-breaking season, more orders worldwide than ever before over this holiday span, which, you know, we're talking Amazon. I mean, you know that is a lot. That being said, they don't really dig deep into the numbers. We sold X number, we sold Y number. They just kind of lead you into some of the top selling products, a lot of them being Amazon products, the Dot, the Echo, their security system, the Kindle as well. But they do talk a little bit about some of the toys that were pretty big, those LOL Surprise Glam Glitter Series dolls, the Nerf End Strike Elite Strong Arm Blaster. These are just some of the top sellers that they noticed over that span. But, you know, it's hard to kind of put a container around it because, as we said, it's still going on now. There's still people at the malls, and they're going to continue shopping and shopping at the same level.
And you've got people who may not have seen the people they need to give gifts to. They may not see them till next week. So now they can do their Christmas shopping after and get the big discounts.
This is like getting the Halloween candy the day after Halloween, right? Perfect. Everything's marked off.
Monday after Easter. That's time to go to Fannie Mae. I also think, you know, with the online shopping, the fact that now more and more places are doing expedited shipping or free, you know, and free shipping. Because that used to be, some people would, myself too, I'd look at it and go, well, I got to pay $20 for shipping, or I go stand in line at the mall. I'll save that $20 and go stand in line. But now they've wised up. A lot of free shipping. A lot of, hey, you need it tomorrow? We can get it to you tomorrow.
And on the returns, a lot of free returns. We'll send you the shipping. You just drop your thing in the envelope, put it in the mailbox, and we'll give you your refund, or we'll do it that way. Yeah. So, and a lot of more people feeling confident about that kind of process.
Yes.
Even 3-4 years ago, you'd ask people, would you buy a computer through the mail? Would you buy a television through the mail? And people say, no, I don't trust that. You know,
I want to see it.
Of the FedEx guy throwing the package, you know, onto the doorstep. But now people feeling a lot more confident about that. And that's one of the things I was talking to a shipping company about that. And they said, that's what we've noticed, is people just feeling more confident in the system itself, that it's going to arrive on time, that it's going to be in good shape. And, you know, it's going to work the same way with returns.
Great for online retailers, a challenge for the brick and mortar, of course, to try to get people to keep coming in. Now, you mentioned everybody, you know, yesterday, oh man, people got gift cards. Everybody got their gift cards. So I know you had talked to the Better Business Bureau a day or so ago. What kind of guidelines are they giving to try for people to keep things safe?
Yeah, their focus right now is on these returns, because a lot of people, they come in, they've got the products. First of all, and I admit it, I'm one of these people. I got duplicate gifts from family members.
Okay,
I don't really feel like going to these people and saying, "Hey, you haven't ever received?"
Yeah,
you know, you kind of float around the question, "Oh, where'd you go shopping?" You know, and see if you can and maybe return
it out,
that way. What they recommend is, the receipt is going to make this put less friction into the procedure. If you've got the receipt, even if it's a gift receipt, at least they can look it up. They can know what the price is, and you know, hopefully send you on your merry way. When they don't, we're talking store credit. We're talking prices that have shifted. Maybe prices were more expensive before the holiday. Maybe now they've been marked down, so you're not going to get as much. And that's where things can get a little hairy. If you can, put it in, leave it in its original packaging. But I got to tell you, my son got some gifts.
Yeah.
He had to use a screwdriver to get these things out. I mean,
I was helping my nieces open Barbies yesterday evening. They got Barbie in there like she's trying to escape from some sort of Alcatraz. It's insane.
Yeah, she's got handcuffs on her that you have to take the key out. You have to,
Barbie is bound up way too much. Yes, that's a whole lifestyle that she's into. It's crazy.
That's one of the things they recommend. They also want you to know too, don't just go in there with guns blazing and angry and expect all your money, because there are processes and procedures to go through, and don't just expect that, okay, here, yes sir, here's your cash. You know, I mean, they've got certain policies that they've got to go through, and be prepared to take your time. And on days like today, like tomorrow, and even leading up through the new year, expect there to be lines.
Yeah, relax. Treat those people with respect, and maybe that greases the wheel a little bit.
Maybe. Yeah.
Well, always a pleasure, Ryan. Thanks for taking some time. We'll talk to you soon. All right. No, I should have turned off mine. Yours, not mine. All right, let's do this. Then it's news time, WGN. Hey, it's Brian Noonan in for Rowan Anna, 720 WGN. Minnesota Timberwolves coming into the United Center tonight. Tom Thibodeau, the coach, and Derrick Rose. A name that I thought had been sent off to... you know, the history books, Mark Carmen. I'm not surprised to hear that Derrick Rose has a sore ankle. Has there ever been a game where there was not some sort of debilitating injury to Derrick Rose?
Oh, now, Brian.
With his avian bone syndrome. The man is delicate.
We're talking about the youngest MVP in the history of the league.
I understand that. And then... what happened?
Well, he's had four knee surgeries.
Right.
But
it all went downhill from there. Unfortunately, I mean, we, like every other Bulls fan and Chicago fan, I had huge hopes. I was so excited when Derrick Rose came to the Bulls. It was like, finally, look at this. Hometown kid. This is going to be terrific. And then it just never lived up to what we had all hoped.
Well, it was going great. And then his body did not hold up, obviously.
Yeah.
He's done a tremendous job this year as far as reinventing himself. I mean, this was a guy that was out of the league for a brief period of time last year, and then Minnesota gave him a shot, and now he's in the running for the sixth man of the year. He's averaging 18.5 points a game, nearly 5 assists. He's shooting a career high from the three-point line, which is crazy. I mean, the guy's shooting 47% from three. That's
amazing.
That's bizarre, right?
Yeah.
And it's, he's making 1.5 a game, 3.2 attempts. So, I mean, it's not like he's just, shooting once every blue, he's putting up three a night. So, it's a pretty significant transformation, but also a lot of what could have been had he never gotten hurt.
Well, and that's, I mean, this being the sixth man and playing this game is going to be a lot easier on his body than the cutting and slashing he was doing early in his career when he was, and he was going into lane getting pounded all the time. That's going to take a toll no matter how good a shape you're in.
No doubt. He is not built to play like he did when he was young. There's no way his body can sustain it. Now, he still has his flurries to the hoop where he looks not like his young self, but, oh, my God, you still have a significant amount of speed. Pretty impressive. But he can't do that all the time, and he's, worked himself into a good shooter, and he plays off the ball a lot now. He doesn't play the point guard spot for Minnesota.
What's your prediction for tonight?
Oh, I think it'll be tight. The Bulls have won their last two.
Sure.
Zach LaVine may or may not play tonight. He's coming back from an ankle sprain as well. But I'll take the Timberwolves by, let's call it, by a bucket.
All right. Any more news on the upheaval? The players on the Bulls kind of bristling at the new regime and the new way practices are held. There was going to talk of a mutiny. A lot was going on. Have things settled down a little bit?
So now it's that they're having a great time playing together. It's amazing, sure. Right?
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic.
So
everybody's happy, happy.
I mean, I watched the last game, and the bench is standing up, rooting on their teammates. I was impressed. I'm like, I don't know what Jim Boylan's doing over there, because it certainly was an incredibly rocky beginning.
Yes, it was.
And I don't know if that rockiness has completely left the dock, if you will, here. But
sure.
for the moment, they've won their last two, and it just seems like they've sort of turned the corner here. Jabari Parker's kind of the elephant in the room right now as the Bulls are trying to trade him. He doesn't want to be here. He's not showing up. And all that's the one malcontent.
Oh, well. See ya.
Right. Right.
Boo-hoo. Franchise is bigger than you. Speaking of the Bulls, I'm sure you were very excited and very disappointed at the same time, because I know you've seen the trailer for this Last Dance, this 10-part miniseries coming on ESPN about Jordan and the Bulls in his final championship run.
Yeah, yeah. Brian, I have tried with every fiber of my being to be a part of this project.
Yes.
I did get wind of this a long time ago, about a year ago that this was going on, and they for whatever reason at this point, have not sat down one-on-one with me to really learn what Michael Jordan is all about.
What? They iced you out, and you're the guy who's had, interactions.
Right. It's like Jordan's rookie year All-Star game where Isaiah Thomas wouldn't pass him the basketball, orchestrated by Magic and George Gervin. But I am extremely excited to see what they put together, and it's based on the last year with the Bulls. That's where the majority of the footage is coming from, 1998. But my understanding is they're using that as sort of a jumping off point to tell stories for Jordan's entire career. So there will be, it won't just be the last year of him playing with the Bulls.
No, and it looks like they've got a lot of candid interviews with his former teammates. And so I was all excited about this until the final seconds of the trailer when it says coming in 2020.
Yeah, you got to wait.
It's like, really? Another year? You're going to try to keep this hype going for a year? But I guess they will.
That's the brilliance of the Mandalay Sports Media, I believe, is the production unit that's doing it in conjunction with the ESPN and Jumpman 23, the whole thing. So they're really trying to tell this story accurately, and I think in their mind for the final time. Like, this will be the definitive piece that about the Chicago Bulls, that era, that team, the whole thing.
And it should be. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if there's anything in this series that we have not heard before. You know, we know about Jordan's competitiveness. We know how he, you know, would yell at teammates. We know about the gambling. We know pretty much everything, don't we?
We do, which is what I find interesting. What stories are you going to unearth from back in the day that weren't told? And, you know, a lot of the parts are not here anymore. I mean,
right.
Jerry Krause has passed away. He would be an interesting person, obviously, to talk to as far as this piece is concerned.
Dennis Rodman has gone insane. So are you going to talk to him?
Right. Rodman is perhaps trending in a I don't know. You got to go to North Korea to find Dennis nowadays.
Perhaps.
Maybe they have run him down. I'm sure that these are some seriously talented people. Jason Aher, he did the Bears 85 documentary.
Yeah. It was great.
It was phenomenal. And his Andre the Giant piece, I don't know if you ever saw that.
I did. Yeah.
That was incredible, too. So some highly talented people are working on this.
So it should be a lot of fun. But again, you have to wait a year, which is a tad disconcerting. But
time flies.
What are we going to do? And are you in the rest of the week, Carm?
I am with you, Brian.
All right, good.
Tomorrow and Friday, yeah.
So we will get some, as the weekend draws closer, we will start talking a little more Bears-Vikings. And see, I heard your report earlier. They are going up there to win. They're not going up there to rest, which I like to hear.
No playing around, damn it.
No, let's go up. Let's finish this thing off. Get our 2 seed and move on.
Well,
hopefully.
Right.
Do what we can to get the 2 seed.
Yes, I misspoke earlier. Let me correct myself.
Please
I said the Cardinals and the Vikings. The Vikings are playing the 49ers. The Bears have beaten both those teams. They look similar in some way in their patheticness. It's highly unlikely that the 49ers are going to walk in and beat the Rams.
Beat the Rams, correct.
Right.
All right. Let's do this. When we come back, we'll talk to Andy Field from ABC News, find out any more updates on the shutdown and everything else that is going on in Washington. We'll do that right after this. WGN. All right. We've been hearing the reports about the president and the first lady making a surprise trip to Iraq. And trying to figure out what is going on with the government shutdown, which moves into its fourth day. Andy Fields is ABC News correspondent. He is in Washington, D.C., and he joins us now. Andy, thanks for taking some time this afternoon.
Thank you, Brian. Yeah, this has been an interesting day. This surprise trip that the president took was not a surprise to the White House, according to people we've spoken to there. They said that this has been in the works for the last 6 weeks. There's a lot of planning that goes into these secret presidential trips. There have been a number of them over the years. Lately, with Presidents Clinton, Obama, both Bushes, having visited the troops many times overseas over Christmas. This was, despite the fact that the president says that ISIS has been wiped out in Iraq, the reality is it's still dangerous to travel anywhere in that country. And the president talked about the incredible security that went along with turning lights out in the plane, changing the call sign to Air Force One, even though people spotted it on the way toward Baghdad. And the fact that they had to have fighter jets alongside the plane to make sure that no one attacked the president.
Well, it seems, you know, we have to believe. Well, we don't have to believe, but as you said, all right, I'm going to believe it that it's been in the works for a number of weeks. It would seem very fortuitous at this moment that the president do this instead of staying at the White House. You know, we've got Mattis first resigning, and then the president saying, well, you know what, we're not going to wait till February. You're done at the end of the year. He's coming under fire for the pullout in Syria, and he's also been criticized in the past for not visiting the troops when he was overseas. So with all of that going on, it just seems, you know, as quickly as a decision like this can be made, it seems like that's what happened rather than a long period of planning.
That's true, although the interesting thing is that the 6 weeks ago corresponds to an interview that he had done with the Associated Press where he said it wasn't absolutely necessary for a president to go visit troops overseas. He got tremendous heat for that, and that may have been what sparked this planning. that got him over there. And we're told that he's supposed to be stopping somewhere else before coming to the U.S. We don't know where that somewhere else is. I mean, there's speculation it could be Afghanistan, but it's even more dangerous for the president or literally anyone to fly to Afghanistan than it is to Iraq.
Now, we saw the president from the Oval Office Christmas morning give an address to the military, and then he went. What was his message in Iraq? What were the differences in the message that he said to the troops in Iraq than the one he gave from the Oval Office?
Well, I think the difference was he was talking to commanders in that teleconference yesterday, and today he was talking directly to troops who are literally on the front line, many of them advising Iraqis, all of them in harm's way, telling, you know, thanking them for their service, telling them probably news they didn't want to hear in Iraq, that he's not pulling American troops out of there anytime soon, as opposed to Syria, where he is, and also explaining that Turkey was going to take over the fight, and you know, that's been criticized as well. If you remember, the president criticized Barack Obama for pulling troops out too early there and claiming that he, Barack Obama, founded ISIS,
right,
which the facts don't support. In fact, if you watch that new movie Vice about Vice President Cheney, you find out the actual factual basis, whereas it was Vice President Cheney directing the administration, the Bush administration, to say the name of a particular, I don't remember, Al-Zawahiri, I think his name was, that, you know, he was the person that was connected to Al-Qaeda, and that was one of the reasons they gave for fighting Iraq, even though they had nothing to do with 9/11, and said that, indeed, that terrorist was the person who founded ISIS many years before Barack Obama even got into office.
Well, listen, Andy, facts don't always come into play. We don't need to focus on facts.
What was the quote? Facts don't have a partisan bias. They're not a Republican or a Democrat.
Yes, we don't need to trouble ourselves with those kind of things. The president is standing firm, though, that despite all the suggestions from his military leaders, this withdrawal from Syria is happening. Correct?
That's what he says, and certainly he will now have a new Defense Department secretary who is going to implement what he wants. Right now, the temporary is the Assistant Secretary of Defense, who basically tries to do everything he can to implement what the president wants, which is apparently different from Secretary Mattis, who is getting kicked out of office literally 2 months before he said he wanted to leave, who basically challenged the president on a lot of his decisions.
Before I let you go, Andy, today was the first day that the government was supposed to be back at work after Monday and Tuesday being federal holidays. The shutdown showing predicted to go on for quite some time. Were there any noticeable differences today, other than for, of course, the 800,000 federal employees who were not either at work, not getting paid, or furloughed?
Well, the most noticeable difference to me was really empty roads on my commute into work today. It was very, very easy to get to work. But,
so you're enjoying the shutdown, is what you're saying?
Yes. I mean, the shutdown's been great for my commute, but I don't think it's particularly good for anyone else. What's interesting is Steve Scalise, who's the whip, the person who has to whip up the votes in the House, announced today that there's not going to be any vote tomorrow. Not until the Senate votes on whatever it is they come up with to vote on. Basically, right now, it's a game of you're it. The House is saying, no, House, you're it. And the Senate's saying, no, you're it. The Senate voted out a clean bill that the president said he would sign.
Right.
It got 100% of the senators voting yes on that there. And then he got criticized by many folks who are pundits in the conservative media. The president said, ooh, I better not do this here. He made a 180-degree change and said, I'm not going to sign that. The House gave him his $5 billion for the wall, which there is zero chance that will pass in the Senate because they don't have those 10 extra Democratic votes to make it happen.
So are the predictions, do you think the predictions are accurate that this shutdown is going to go well into the new year?
I think I'm barring any big change at the moment here, and the president caving, which is he really politically can't do that now without some real harm to himself and his reelection chances. Come the beginning of January, when the House turns over to Democratic control, it is likely they will vote on the same bill the Senate did. They'll have two identical bills. They'll give it to the president, and then it's a game of chicken. Are you gonna veto this? And then can the Democrats come up with enough votes to override his veto?
All right. Well, Andy, always a pleasure to talk to you. Enjoy your easy commute home, and we will talk to you again very soon.
Yes, it'll be great. Thank you.
Take care. You're welcome. That's Andy Field, ABC News correspondent in Washington. We'll talk to our own news correspondent, Kim Gordon, in just a minute on WGN. Thank you, Kim. Brian Noonan in for Ro and Anna. Be here this week, next week. Then they'll come back from vacation, rested and ready. All right. Before the show, I was, Tom walked by. I saw my prep. Thought I was a little nuts. But I was talking with Tom Hush, executive producer today. And one of the stories that I had out was about tipping. And tipping is always a volatile topic. People get all revved up about it. And I'm going to say at the outset, I am a very good tipper when it comes to going to a restaurant or, when someone actually gives me prolonged service, I reward those people for good service. The story I had is about how now with the touch screens and tipping being put right up in front of things, how it has changed not only our perception of tipping, but the pressure that a customer feels to tip. And mostly it's about counter service. So it used the coffee shop as an example. And somebody going up and they order a cup of coffee and a donut or whatever it is they eat, and somebody hands you a cup of coffee. Are you then required to tip? Do you feel the necessity to tip? And if you're using a credit card or a debit card now, on a lot of these screens, an extra screen will pop up. Do you want a tip? And, the person behind the counter is eyeballing you. They're watching. Where it used to be, you just had had the jar there. And if you were in a giving mood and you wanted to throw a buck in or your change, that was fine. But the restaurants or the businesses now are in charge of putting together a range of tipping. And you have to take the time to go through an extra couple steps if you want to customize that tip. If somebody's handing you a cup of coffee, do you really think that necessitates a 15 to 20% tip? I do not. If they turn, I know, Tom's chomping at
me. I'm seething.
I know you're seething. But listen, I've worked in food service. I've worked in retail. I understand it. I have relatives who are in the hospitality business. Mm-hmm. So, again, I am not opposed to tipping. This is not a scene out of Reservoir Dogs. I'm not going to say that I don't believe in tipping. I also know that waiters and waitresses make less than a barista who is making at least minimum wage or somebody at Dunkin' Donuts who is making at least minimum wage. They're not there working on tips. Now, granted, that is not a huge wage, but it's also different. So I do not believe that I owe a tip. Now, every once in a while, if I'm feeling exceptionally generous, and I happen to be, I don't really go to Starbucks or places, but if I'm, if I happen to go, like now my daughter's home, if we stop for a coffee or something, if I'm feeling good or it's the holidays, I'll throw a little something in. But I don't tip if I go pick up a takeout order. I don't tip if I'm, if somebody's just handing me something, that doesn't, in my view, necessitate a tip. 312-981-7200. I know you want to jump in. I know you want to jump in, Tom, so go ahead.
Well, because everybody has their own theories on tipping, right?
Yes.
Even when it comes to bartenders, some people have like a really nuanced way they go for bartenders. Because they're just like, okay, if they mix the drink, I'll tip higher than, I'll do $2 on a cocktail, $1 on a beer.
Okay.
But the thing is that like, why not just tip across the board? I don't know. It's whenever I go to a coffee shop,
some things don't require a lot of effort on the person who hands them to you.
Do you tip for a cappuccino? If someone put together a cappuccino for you, a foamy milk.
First of all, I'm not buying a cappuccino.
Okay,
what am I? Some European?
Play with me here. Come on.
So
give me the benefit of the doubt.
All right. If I go into Starbucks and I get myself a skinny peppermint mocha, which I am want to do occasionally during the holidays, everyone's. It depends. I don't know if they're really busy. Maybe I'll throw them a little something, but I'm not going to do it on the screen. I'm not going to be shamed into tipping because they've decided to go with this new automated process. I'm not going to do it. It's just, you know, so maybe they get something, but more often than not, no, because there's one person taking the order. Somebody else is just working the coffee, and they're not working for tips. They're, that restaurant, that business is not set up for people to be working for tips. If you get tips, that's nice. Carm, this may surprise you. I used to work at a Ben & Jerry's when I first moved to California.
That's outstanding.
It was fun, fun, fun. And again, that was back in the Big Brian days when the thought of free ice cream was, man, that's, you know, that's like somebody else giving you 3 weeks paid vacation. Mm-hmm. It's like, really? Free ice cream? I would have a tip jar out there, but I was not working for tips. If somebody ordered a cone, I scooped it up, I handed it to them. It wasn't a lot. It wasn't labor intensive. Even if they wanted a shake, it was not that labor intensive. If they wanted to throw me a buck or 50 or whatever in the jar, that's cool.
How many people would you say did? Would you walk away with every
Not
day?
Much. Yeah, not much. People don't tip at an ice cream parlor. You know, they're out for themselves. It's a very selfish society, Kim. You know, somebody wants a double scoop of fish food. They're not looking to give give the scoop jockey behind the counter any love. They just want to get their ice cream and skedaddle.
See, I think it's tough because a cup of coffee at the place you're describing, that's $3. So now I'm tipping, it's $4. I'm paying
insane.
I'm paying $4 for a cup of coffee. It's insane.
Yeah. If I'm sitting at a table for an hour or even a half hour, or if I'm sitting at the counter and a waitress is bringing me stuff and, you know, oh, do you need more coffee? Sure, I do. By all means, boom, start out at 20%. Let's see where it goes from there. But you know, I roll through Dunkin' Donuts. I get myself a glazed and a cup of Joe. That's it.
Well, here's the thing. Like, you know, when you have Apple Pay now and all these things, people had a much better shot with me of giving them a tip. If I had some change, I'd throw it in the jar.
Yes.
But now, like, it kind of makes you mad because they say suggested tip.
Yes.
You know, and it lists these dollars amounts, and I'm like, $2, $3, $4 for, you know, a cup of coffee? That's
no,
stupid.
It's not going to happen. And that was the gist of this piece, that that technology is actually, while it's trying to guilt us into tipping more, it's actually having the reverse effect for a lot of people. Because as both you and Mark said, Kim, I'm not going to tip $2 on a cup of coffee. And I'm not going to, listen, I'm by no means a Luddite, but I'm not going to have to try to stand there for 3 minutes trying to figure out the screens to go back and calculate a tip and do this and that. No.
So, but that, I'm thinking about it. At Starbucks, they don't offer you the tipping option, correct? At Dunkin' Donuts, they don't. It's more.
No, it's more like new, smaller places that have, you know, the iPad screen.
Yes,
and
right.
Those.
And they do have tip jars at Starbucks.
Sure.
No, not anymore. I haven't
no?
seen them
yes.
recently. They do?
Really? Last time I was in one, they had a tip jar.
I wonder if it's the manager's discretion.
You can, you know, when you use your app, they ask you if you want to add a tip.
If you go above and beyond the Call of Duty, like, Brian, to your
ice cream. What's that? If I reach in and grab the bigger scone than the smaller scone, if I get the scone with three more blueberries, that's the extra effort?
No, look, if I'm coming to an ice cream parlor and you're making me a milkshake, not that easy of a gig. You got to reach down in there. You got to scoop it out. That means
scoop
a battle.
Scoop it out.
And you know, there's different techniques on the ice cream. Maybe you make, like, a really delicious shake.
I do. I made a great shake.
Right. So that guy you deserve a buck for that.
Okay, or here's
but wait a minute, but that's the job.
That's the job, yeah.
Okay, so just, you know, you're a CTA bus driver. You're driving the bus. I get to where I'm going on time. Does that merit a tip?
Well, hold on. How about the guy at the airport, Jennings, who you take the rental car thing. He lifts your bag up. He puts it on the thing. You get there.
You give him a buck a bag for loading the shuttle bus.
That's one thing.
Sure.
That's one thing.
He's doing physical labor. I know that's the job, but he's also hoisting up. You don't know what I carry in my suitcase, Carmen. There's like infants and animals in there. It's heavy. They're not. It's not an easy bag to toss around.
And the stuff squirming around in there, too.
There's hollering and moaning and things dripping out. I give that guy a buck a bag.
I also want to know, at the highfalutin where they have the square thing and they turn it around on you, do they see if you tipped or not?
Of course they can.
Yes, they can tell.
See, I try to like, I hit every single thing on there so it's like a clear screen. That's my strategy.
Then they hate you.
Yeah, right. They're like, this guy just broke everything. Give us a dollar.
And I don't have any rhyme or reason for the record. Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. And when I don't, I feel incredibly guilty.
Do you really?
Yeah, I do.
I have to tell you, for the most part, Apple Pay is the best thing ever invented. I love it, but you do feel guilty about the tip thing.
All right. Well, listen, we got a lot of people who want to chime in. 312-981-7200. We will get to your calls right after this. All right. The new payment systems where you are asked automatically if you want to add a tip. It's causing some people some concern. I don't know what to do. I don't like to feel pressured. What do you think? 312-981-7200. Are you tipping in some of these places where the person handing you whatever you've ordered has not really had to go above and beyond to really finish your order? 312-981-7200. Elise has been hanging on. Hi, Elise.
Hi. I do on occasion when I go into Dunkin' Donuts, we'll do that. But my big thing is I tip very well at restaurants because my daughter's a server.
Yeah, and as I said, that's a whole different thing.
No, but even it's because of that, you know, I think about it a little bit more when I drop for a cup of coffee because I've heard too many stories of people sticking her on a bill, getting a $5 tip on a $100 order, you know, and things like that. And I know she works hard because I went down, she worked at a restaurant downtown, and we went for dinner one night, and I was listening to her talk to all the people about what the menu had and what she would recommend. So she had to learn a lot of things to be able to do the job. It wasn't like she just walked in and started serving food.
Right, but that's a whole lot different than, hey, turn around, please, and hand me a blueberry muffin. It doesn't take any expertise. It doesn't really take any finesse. It just takes, I can read that says blueberry muffin. I put it in a bag. Here you go. I don't, you know.
And I don't use Apple Pay. I'm paying either with cash or a Dunkin' Donuts card when I walk in. Uh-huh. So
there you go. Yeah. That's it. It's all this technology is starting to get a little confusing for everybody. Thanks, Elise. Somebody else said, now this is Brian in Montana who texts us a lot. I work at a grocery store. I've scanned the products, typed in the codes, plus bagged them. We can't receive tips, should we? Again, no.
I'll throw this out there. I also work at a movie theater. I work at a small movie theater.
Right, if you hand me Milk Duds, you don't deserve a tip.
But people do it anyway. Why do they do it?
Because they're much nicer than I am.
And there's a lot of, I got to throw out the idea of emotional labor. The emotional labor of being... What? Happy all the time? Seriously, people get upset if you're not smiling.
Well, listen, that's part of the gig. That's you're in the customer service business. You have to treat the public nicely. If it's that much of a chore for you to be nice to people, maybe you chose the wrong line of work.
You know, I got a crisp $5 tip for you after this show. You've done a good show today.
It would be like if I didn't like talking, this probably would not be the line of work I should have chosen. And probably, you know, we got to give him a couple bucks. He actually put together two sentences today. That's fantastic. The emotional toll it took me to go on this little diatribe is worth at least 15 to 20%. I'm not going to lie to you. Diane wants to jump in. Hi, Diane.
Hi. This year, Thanksgiving, went to a country club. Been going there 10 years for brunch. $42 a plate. This year, the first time there was gratuity added to our bill. At 18% of, so it equals about $32. Yeah. There was only five of us.
Okay, see,
and this is a brunch. It's a buffet. Excuse me, it's a buffet.
Okay,
so we went up and got our food, and all they did was clear our plates and refilled our drinks for $32.
Yeah.
Almost the cost of another meal.
I think for a buffet, 18% is way too much.
Like I said,
a buffet, if you're going to a holiday buffet, I don't mind them throwing a little gratuity on there because have people who are coming into work on the holiday.
But, absolutely.
But
and that's almost the cost of another plate.
No, that seems excessive. I'm guessing you won't be back there next year, Diane.
And it's very sad. It was our tradition for 10 years, and now they've lost their business.
Time for a new tradition.
Nah, you got that right.
Thanks, Diane. Bye-bye. Katrina has been hanging on. Hi, Katrina.
Hey. Okay, so honestly, my thing is, if you're going to tip, Tip because you want to tip. Don't tip because you feel obligated to tip.
Right.
Seriously. And also, the little the pop-up screens that say like how much you want to tip, and then it gives you the suggested amount. Honestly, or the suggested amounts. I mean, honestly, I think they should, if they're going to keep the pop-up screens, keep them, fine. But don't have the suggested amounts on there. You can just have, you could put what you want.
Right, let people enter it themselves. That would be,
I think that takes
the guilt out of it.
Yes, because if that's like, you know, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, yep, I agree. Thank you, Katrina. It goes, somebody says, I work a 40-hour week, and then I bartend on the side. If I'm serving you for 30 minutes to an hour, I would expect a tip. If you pop in for one beer that costs $3, I'm not expecting a tip. And that's kind of, see, but I'll always throw the bartender a little something. You know, again.
Yeah. And that's like, I mean, he's given a pretty, like, measured, that's kind of like best of both worlds, where it's like, yeah, if I'm serving you for a while, I would like a tip.
Right.
And especially bartenders, most of them are on that tipping wage, bar backs on the tipping wage. And they're getting a percentage of what the bar.
Yeah. So bartenders. Now, here we go. This ties into the very beginning of the show. There are some Chinese takeout places that have the tip option, and I always feel awkward. I do, too, because my Chinese place, I go in to get the food, and on the bottom of the credit card slip, it's the line for the tip. And I always feel bad putting a line through it, and yet I do.
I tip.
Do you?
It really, at the end of the day, I'm, you know, it don't make you a bad person if you don't want to. It's a thing. It's not a big deal. But I just do it because, I don't know, I've been there. I know what that's like. I'm going to throw him a couple extra bucks because really, what is it to me?
It's a couple extra bucks.
It's a couple extra bucks. I can live with that.
Listen, you're making that big time. You're making that producer money, so you can throw around a couple extra bucks. You know, you've got that kind of dough.
Oh boy,
some of us were struggling a little bit, Tom. You know, we get the producer money. I guess. All right, good for you. All right. On the other side of the news, we are going to give you a chance to go to the Winter Classic at Notre Dame Stadium to see the Blackhawks play the Bruins. When we come back, we will tell you what callers we're going to go Thunderdome. Two people enter, one person leaves. That's how you're going to go see the Winter Classic on WGN.
95 years of sports. Chicago sports conversation as a whole. The Bears met the challenge. WGN Radio in 2019. 95 years young.
All right. On the other side of the news, we're going to give you a chance. Tom, what callers would you like to get to battle for these tickets?
Let's do caller number 7 and caller number 10.
All right, caller 7 and caller 10 at 312-981-7200. On the other side of the news, we are going to give you some Blackhawks trivia, and the winner will get to go to the Winter Classic, the Blackhawks taking on the Bruins at the Stadium, Notre Dame Stadium. It's going to be very, very fun. Okay, hear the sounds that matter. The top 5 of 5 from the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellante's weekday afternoons on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Yes. Chelsea Dagger. Brian Noonan for Rowan Anna. 6 o'clock, we are going to interview, an Academy Award-winning composer. Who is it? I'll tell you later. But right now, I am giving you a chance to head down to South Bend, Indiana, to Notre Dame Stadium, the Winter Classic, coming up on New Year's Day. The Chicago Blackhawks play the Boston Bruins. It is going to be very, very exciting. Leading up to the game, be sure to visit the Blackhawks Hockey House, now open at 333 North Michigan Avenue, just south of the Blackhawks store. It's filled with one-of-a-kind team exhibits, exclusive Winter Classic merchandise, and much, much more. Then there's the NHL Winter Classic Park. It's a free fan festival. It's happening in Millennium Park. You can enjoy games, food, drinks, meet and get autographs from the Blackhawks, and that is happening December 29th through the 31st. So I have a pair of tickets to go to South Bend, Indiana to see this game. It should be a lot of fun. A lot of history on South Bend. Have you been to the Notre Dame campus before, Tom?
Oh, I've only seen it in pictures.
Oh, it's seems like magical.
I love that dome.
A magical place. Carm, Touchdown Jesus, one of your faves?
Been there, seen it, done it, respect it. They're something down there. Welcome to Notre Dame is their thing. They yes, greet you.
They do. They love when you go down there. And I will say, whether you're an Irish fan or not, and a lot of people are very anti-Notre Dame, but you go there on a game day, holy cow. It's like if you go to any big-time football program on game day, it's hypnotic. It makes you fall in love, and Notre Dame is no exception. Their hockey rink, very cool, but this game, the Winter Classic, is happening in the stadium. You know, the home that Rockne built.
Rudy.
You think Rudy's going to come out and do a shift? Is he going to get one last shift?
Rudy Rudiger, one last shift. That's a great angle. I don't know if they've thought of that.
I tell you what, I would be surprised if they didn't, because the promotion folks over at the Blackhawks, they know what they're doing. But I'm sure they thought of it and then went, that couldn't be stupider. Couldn't be more dumb. So they decided not to do it. The house that Rockne built, the house that Rudy made famous, everybody else. So that's going. But here's the catch. You have to be able to come down here to 303 East Wacker, find the offices of WGN Radio, and pick up the tickets. So we were going to do it the last couple days. I've given them away just by asking one trivia question. And then Tom Hush, the fine executive producer, said, that's too easy. We got to do a death match. We got to go Thunderdome. We got to want two people enter, one person leaves. So let's see who those two people are. First one is Judy. She's in Rockford. Hi, Judy.
Woohoo! What's up?
What's up, Judy? What do you do in Rockford?
Well, actually, I'm not going to lie. Judy's my mom, and she's a nurse in Rockford. And I'm Lexi.
I'm right here. Woo!
and I'm a student at UW-Madison.
All right. Leslie is a student at UW-Madison studying what? Fraud?
Radio game show fraud? Computer science fraud.
Okay. So, Tom, I have to ask, are we going to allow them to work as a team?
I'll allow it.
You'll allow it. All right, Tom's the judge.
Thanks, Tom.
So, Leslie and Judy. Oh, don't try to butter him up now, Leslie or Judy, whichever one of you this is. Oh, very duplicitous. I'm not a fan of this at all. Brittany is in Gurnee. Let's see how Brittany feels about it. Hi, Brittany.
That's not fair. I'm by myself.
Uh-oh. Well, listen, it's going to be sometimes one brain is better than two, Brittany.
This is true.
We'll see. What do you do in Gurnee? Do you work at the roller coasters over there in Six Flags?
I do not, but I'm pretty close to the Six Flags.
All right. You know a lot about hockey?
I would like to say so.
Well, let's find out. I didn't even ask. I didn't even ask the team, the Rockford team. Not the Rockford Peaches, the Rockford Fraudulent Ladies, I think we'll call them that.
The Fraud Experts.
The Rockford fraud experts. All right, here's how it's going to work, ladies, as many of you as are on the phone. I am going to ask you a question. If you get the question right, you get a point. If not, your opponent will get a chance to steal. First one, when time is up, they have the best of five. A best of five is what we're going to do. So the first one to three is going to be our big winner. Does everybody understand?
Yes.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
All right. I've heard 72 voices, so I think we have everybody ready to play the game. This is very, very exciting. Now we get the music going. And here, I will make the flip. And our first question will go to Brittany. Brittany, here we go. Are you ready?
Yep.
All right. This is very exciting, Brittany. Who is the only original six team that has won fewer Stanley Cups than Chicago? Is it the New York Rangers, the Detroit Red Wings, or the Montreal Canadiens?
I'm going to go with the New York Rangers.
You're going to go with the New York Rangers, and I say that is correct. New York Rangers have only won four Stanley Cups. That is the fewest of all the original six teams. So, Brittany, even with only one person, you have still gotten your first answer correct. Do you feel vindicated?
Yes.
Are you doing some sort of dance to taunt the team of Rockford Frauds?
Yes.
All right, very nice. All right, Leslie and Judy, are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
All right, you've got your mind meld on.
Yep.
Who was the first Chicago Blackhawk to have his jersey number retired? Was it Keith Magnuson, Pierre Palit, Bobby Hull, or Stan Mikita?
I'm going to go with Stan Mikita.
You are going to go with Stan Mikita. Is that your final answer? Yes. The answer is yes. It's your final answer. Oh, we're all tied up, Carm. This is exciting. I know you love a good sporting event, a game of chance. Have you made any wagers?
Edge of my seat over here, Brian.
If anybody watching the stream knows, you are not at the edge of your seat. You are actually under your seat. But do you have a favorite at this point, Carm? We're all tied up.
I am rooting against the duo,
rooting against the duo. That's good for you, Brittany. You know, when you got Carm on your side. All right. We go back to Brittany. Brittany, speaking of Stan Mikita, which we were because he was the answer to our last question, he famously had a fictional donut shop named after him in the classic comedy Wayne's World. For a point, 1 point closer to going to the Winter Classic, where was that fictional shop located?
Detroit.
Oh, that is incorrect, giving the evil duo from Rockford a chance to steal. Ladies, I will repeat the question because I am a benevolent host. Speaking of Stan Mikita, he famously had a fictional donut shop named after him in the classic comedy Wayne's World. Where was that shop located?
Aurora.
That is correct, and with the steal, Leslie and Judy, the tag team from Rockford, Illinois, takes the lead 2-1, and it is still their question, which means, Leslie and Judy, as much as Carm is protesting your involvement in this contest, if you get this one correct, you will win. If not, Brittany will have a chance to steal. Ladies, are you ready?
I don't know. I think so.
Wow, they sound a little, there's some trepidation now in the team from Rockford. They were very confident early on. Now, not so much. All right. How long was the Blackhawks' Stanley Cup drought before they won it again in 2010? Was it 50 years, 63 years, 37 years, or 22 years? How long was the Blackhawks' Stanley Cup drought before they won it again in 2010? 50 years, 63 years, 37 years, or 22 years? I need an answer in 3 seconds. 22 years. Oh, that is incorrect. Twice the misery. But Brittany is not miserable because she gets a chance to steal. I'll repeat the question, Brittany. How long was the Blackhawks' Stanley Cup drought before they won it again in 2010? 50 years, 37 years, 63 years, or 22 years?
37
years. Incorrect. Incorrect. It was 50 years. 50 years, ladies. All right, we come back to Brittany. Brittany, what was Bobby Hull's nickname?
Oh, crap.
No, it was not that at all. Sorry.
I'm throwing a blank.
So oh, no. All right.
I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
All right, so that means for the win, another chance, the tag team divas from Rockford, Illinois, weighing in at a combined weight of 67 pounds, Leslie and Judy for the win. What was Bobby Hull's nickname?
I know this one. Golden Jet, baby.
Golden Jet, baby.
Awesome!
That is correct. And now, Carm giving him the courtesy clap for the big win. Leslie and Judy, you have won a pair of tickets to go see the Blackhawks play the Boston Bruins in the Winter Classic at Notre Dame Stadium this New Year's Day. One or two of you will have to come down to the radio station either tomorrow between 9 and 5 or Friday between 9 and 2 to pick up the tickets. The promotions department will be following up with you. Tom, I assume, has all your information. Stay on the line. Do not go anywhere. one or both of you. Do not go anywhere. Congratulations on the big win. Hope you enjoy the game. There you go. So hang on. And now, Brittany, because I don't like anybody to go away empty-handed, we're going to send you a $25 Lou Malnati's gift certificate. How's that sound to you?
Oh, all right. That sounds great. Thank
there you.
You
go. So now everybody leaves happy. It's the holidays. Thank you for playing the game, Brittany. Congratulations. Hang on, and Tom will get all your information. So there you go. Carm, do you feel... do you feel the game was tainted a little bit because of a tag? I don't know if they were working together, but it seemed a little sketchy.
The opportunity was there for everybody, Brian. The questions were very fair, and
I thought so.
I think that the way it went was was fair at the end of the day.
You're a diplomatic man, despite your early worries about it.
Well, I was very disappointed with Tom Hush, producer extraordinaire, to allow a tag team duo. That is against the...
He seemed a little surprised that Leslie jumped on, in Tom's defense.
I was shocked. It was an audible that I was not expecting.
He had the cartoon eyes that came bugging out of his head when Leslie jumped in place of her mom.
Well, then we got to go to the top of the food chain, Brian, and that is you. You are the commissioner, and you allowed the chicanery.
I did allow the chicanery. I was, I believed that that the questions were fair, that the contest was good. We had everybody had a chance. It didn't seem, I got to be honest, it seems like Leslie was running that show.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. It didn't seem Judy was really involved in answering those questions.
Right. No, Judy was a non-factor.
Leslie was all jacked up. She's obviously the one who's going to be driving all night, getting down to South Bend, doing God knows what in the Winter Classic.
Leslie's always been a leader.
Yeah, she is. She's down there. And Brittany gets some great pizza from Lou Malnati. So everybody leaves happy. Nobody leaves sad. And that's the goal. I don't want anybody leaving sad. Disgusted is one thing. Sad's a whole other topic. I don't want to get into that.
She seemed very pleased with the pizza, Brian.
Well, that's good. Thank you, Carm. I appreciate that. Uh-oh. Somebody asking, how about a Blackhawks ticket contest? For those of us who can't call, we have to text, and we suffer through the Boris Mironov years. Sorry. I don't
can't
know. Somebody,
do
I don't know if any Pete might have tickets tomorrow morning. Maybe he'll just do. Maybe he'll do a text contest. I don't know what they do on the every show gives them away the way they want. So
yeah,
we went with Bloodsport. That's how we did it.
Yeah. Bloodsport's fun.
Bloodsport is always fun.
In the holiday mood.
Gotta have a little Bloodsport. All right, so yesterday was Christmas, and I know we only have a couple minutes, but I saw this article. People are now calling for a ban on gift wrapping. A ban on gift wrapping because it's bad for the environment. It's one of the few things we do with paper, they say, that it's a one-shot deal. That, you know, the only reason we have wrapping paper is to throw it away. And a lot of it is not recyclable. It can't go through because of the glitter or the colors that they use on it. It's not recyclable. So it just ends up in landfills, which I would argue make landfills look much more festive with a lot of gift wrap blowing around. But that's just me. So, you know, can't we do something else? Can't we use brown paper bags, or can't we use old newsprint
to
wrap our paper? Is that what you use?
Oh, yeah. I get some of my favorite. I get the newspaper every morning. I take the funnies and I save them.
The funnies are, that's how you got
great
it. It's, the Sunday
paper.
Funnies make great wrapping paper.
Bingo.
But you would have to buy a lot of newspapers to have that many Sunday funnies, because those are the ones in color. Are you doing the black and white in the daily?
I'll take
paper?
Some dailies if they're good ones, but they have to be good funnies. Like if it's not a good
are there
crankshaft.
Many good funnies anymore? I mean,
I don't
as
know.
A
the
kid,
circus.
I love the funnies. The Family Circus, really? You're gonna go Family Circus on me?
Oh, well, you
what's
know.
Next? Beetle Bailey? You know,
Beetle Bailey has some solid laughs, and you
BC,
know that.
Little okay. Dick Tracy,
Wizard of Id.
Well, sure, the Wizard of Id.
Is Ziggy still in? Is Ziggy a comic?
I don't know if he was. I don't know if Ziggy is still in existence. To be honest, and this is a sad state of affairs. Since I stopped getting, I read the paper online, which I know is not popular, but I read the Trib online, and they don't have a nice comic section.
That's why you got to pay extra.
I guess you got to pay extra to have it brought
ink
to your
money.
House. But sure, ink costs money, paper costs money. I get the overhead of the whole enterprise. I know how this works. But I think I got to a certain age, I stopped reading the funnies. And that was, you know... That was an every Sunday thing. I couldn't wait to get the fun. But then, the comic section started going down, and then they started throwing in puzzles. And I was like, I don't need my brain stretched. It's Sunday. I'm in school. I got to work on school stuff all week. I don't have to do that right now. Right now, I want to see what Dick Tracy's up to with his two-way wrist radio that seemed, you know, back then. Oh, man, that was high tech. back then.
It was amazing.
Oh, sure. People, they're talking to each other on their wristwatch? Really? Carm's laughing because I'm 108 years old. See, back then, Carm, that was high tech. A detective in a yellow trench coat talking into his wrist and somebody else hearing it? Come on.
No, it's big time, Brian.
It's space age.
I just didn't know that anybody actually really looked forward to getting the funnies, but...
Oh, man, we would get... back when the Sunday Tribune weighed about 18 pounds,
right?
It would come to the house, and, you know, my brothers and I, we didn't care about anything else. We'd go right to the funnies. Then it'd go funnies, then it was the sports section, then it was the arts and entertainment. We were kids. We didn't care about the real news. I mean, there were fine journalists working hard to fill this paper with interesting facts and stories and blowing the lid off corruption. I was like, oh, I don't care. I don't care. What's playing at the Glenwood Theater? And, you know, what are the Bears doing? What are the Sox doing? That's all I cared about.
I think I must have lived a deprived childhood or something like that. I just read the sports section. But after that, I'd probably go front page before I'd go funnies.
Maybe at seven?
I think
young Carm is reading the
I don't know about at seven.
Page?
I don't know if I read anything at seven. I was, you know, Cat in the Hat was big. But I think by 10, 11... I probably would go to the front page and like look at the weather and hope that it was just going to be warm or something.
Oh, sure. I'd look at the weather, too. You got to look at the back page of that first section.
Back page of the first section, the weather.
Now, Dave texting in, toilet paper, a one-shot deal, too. Yes, but, you know, that's much thinner. We're not.
Yeah, we kind of need that.
Well, how many centuries did they go without it?
Well, I think, bidets are probably more popular.
That'd be lovely. We're not going to get into that right now. We're going to talk about movies on the other side of the news, though. It's 5:30 on 720 WGN.
There's no business like show business, like no business I know. Everything about it is appealing. Everything that traffic...
It's show business. It's all about the business. Usually over the holidays, big weekend for the movies. I've not gone to a movie in a little while. I feel bad about that. I've been watching movies on the Netflix. Carm, last movie you saw in a theater?
I went yesterday, Brian.
What'd you see?
I saw Green Book.
Green Book. Oh, that's,
I heard it's really good.
Yeah, that's the one about the musician and his driver going through the South, correct? Back in the, is it the 50s or the 60s?
I believe it was the 60s. And it was excellent. It was, It brought a tear to the eye, Brian, a smile to the face. It was a great movie. I enjoyed it.
And it's been out for about a month and a half. Kim, last movie you saw in a theater?
Star is Born.
How was it? Everybody's saying I got to see it.
I loved it, but I would have loved it more had the ending not been so sad. Though I knew the ending was going to be really sad and depressing, it was really sad.
Yeah, isn't that the way it always has ended?
Yeah.
I don't think this is a spoiler.
No, I know it's not, but, you know... It was just so good and so heartfelt, and the music is amazing.
It was awesome.
So if Bradley Cooper had changed it up and all of a sudden there was everything was wonderful.
I would have really loved it.
He goes into rehab, he comes out, and oh man, everything's dandy. That would have been better.
That would have been way better.
All right, very good. Blake Stubbs, you've heard him on WGN many times, talking about movies, giving his thoughts. He joins us now on WGN. Blake, thanks for taking some time. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me, Brian. I think this is our first time interacting. I'm looking forward to it.
Listen, Tom. Tom gave you quite the talk up, so I am excited to talk to you as well. A lot of movies open this week. Let's talk about the one that opened very, very badly. Robert Zemeckis and Steve Carell's Welcome to Marwen. You could say it bombed. It opened on about 1,900 screens. It averaged about $1,200 a screen, a whopping $2,366 for the opening weekend. Not good.
Not at all. And it's pretty sad because I am a Robert Zemeckis fan. The man has made some big movies in my life. I'm sure they're big ones in yours as well. And this is a movie with a cast full of people that I enjoy. Mm-hmm. This is about a story that, based on the trailers, I thought, oh, this is going to be a big one. This could be a really cool visual. I mean, they're going to take us places. There's going to be a lot of emotional hook to it. Audiences are not enjoying this movie. Critics are not enjoying this movie. Mm. I have yet to see it. I didn't prioritize it. I have to be honest with you.
Well,
with the holidays,
seems...
you know, I mean, you only can maybe get out to see one or two.
Exactly.
And this one, it wasn't on my list this weekend. So.
Yeah.
Hopefully I can talk to you at length about it later, but once I've seen it. But yeah, this movie is... It bombed, to say the least.
I was just surprised, but it looked from the trailers and the story, it seems like a difficult film for mass audiences to find accessible. It just there's a lot going on in it, and then you have to suspend your reality to go into his fantasy world. It seemed tough.
Yeah, and just a brief synopsis is that a man who is an artist, creative type, he's attacked, and after the attack, he loses pretty much most of his memory and the ability to do what he did prior to the attack. And so he has to find a new creative outlet, and when he does, he makes dioramas and takes pictures of them. But then it steps into the fantasy world, and he has to try to find a new way to find confidence and overcome these obstacles that he's dealing with every day. And I think I agree with you. I think that's a hard story to tell and make it both engaging but also, you know, emotionally pulling. And at the same time, clearly, you know, it shows. I mean, the numbers aren't lying about this one.
Right. And people want, especially during the holidays, you know, we've got a lot of things on our plate with the holidays. We've got a lot of things going on in the world that maybe we just want to escape. So people are heading out to see A Man Who Talks to the Fish. Aquaman opening huge, $67 million in weekend gross. The number one movie by a mile. I don't know. I'm a self-confessed Marvel guy, so the DC characters never really grabbed me. I did not, you know, Justice League and all that was a, So I don't know. Yeah. Should I waste my time and go see, or maybe it's not a waste of time. Should I go see Aquaman?
I would argue that Aquaman is not a waste of time. It was actually a giant opportunity for the DC universe. One thing I will say about Justice League, which was a film I did not really enjoy. I enjoyed the actors who were playing the parts of the big characters in the film.
That's
so
fair.
Knowing that they had a good actor in Jason Momoa for this part, I mean, he's got the look, the personality. He can definitely breathe some big life into this character. And they attached James Wan, who is a great visual director. As far as visuals go, this man knows how to put eye candy on the screen. I was very hopeful. What I got was a movie that, if I recall correctly, did have some reshoots. They had originally planned, I think, at one point for this movie to be released last year. Waiting a year and putting it out when it wouldn't go up against anything Star Wars related, when it wouldn't go up against, you know, a mega Disney title and have its own time, they were able to refine. And the visuals in this movie are big. One of the big things you might know that you might agree with me on is that, you know, Justice League and Batman versus Superman, they're very dark, brooding.
Yes.
The color palettes are very muted. This movie throws all of that away. It is a very bright, vibrant film to see with great, you know, action sequence visuals that, they kind of break a few of the rules that I didn't expect them to do with the camera, but it works for this movie. And again, it's full of personality. It's a nice change of pace from what we've seen in previous DC films. So yeah, I would say this is one you should go see.
So Aquaman, for those who aren't familiar, Aquaman was not a really prominent character in the comic books. He had the bright yellow and green suit, and he rode a seahorse, and he was, you know, everybody looked at him as kind of whatever. What's the story? Because Jason Momoa is an imposing presence. People might know him from Game of Thrones as he's a big dude. How does his presence change, and what's the overall story of the Aquaman movie?
Well, the overall story is, this is more of an origin story. It doesn't want to owe anything to the other DC Universe films. So you get how his mother, who is Queen of Atlantis, met his father, who was a human and a land dweller, how they fell in love. That's the very beginning of the movie. Once he sort of grows up and just lives on land, he's never even seen Atlantis, crisis, you know, develops, and he's called upon to sort of step up. But he's very reluctant to do so. And that's one of the things I think Momoa does very well in his performance, is that his swagger, you know, the way that he sort of, you know, just, he doesn't mug for the camera, but he really chews on the scenery and the scenes he's in. And again, I don't know that Jason Momoa is the kind of guy that wants to step up and do Shakespeare, but when you give him really fun dialogue, And maybe he does. But when you give him fun dialogue, which, by the way, compared to the DC predecessor films, this one is a very fun, dialogue-rich movie.
Okay.
He definitely shines. And again, it's there's a charisma, there's a draw in him. And trust me, like, audiences are seeing this movie. It had a very big opening. It is also, I believe, the first DC film of this big era of films they've made that's been released in December. So I read some article the other day about how it didn't open as big as the other films. Well, it also didn't open in the summer.
Right.
You know, they put it out at Christmas, which is a different time. This movie will have legs. This movie will, or fins, depending on if you want to use puns. But
let's
it'll
do
definitely
it.
Carry. And it's, trust me, I think this is a movie you want to get out and see. They set up a good contained story in this. And it's big, and it's epic, and the visuals are probably going to surprise you at how big this movie actually is.
All right, so if you're looking for a good time, Aquaman might be the way to go.
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
All right, let's do one more before we take a break. Honestly, I hadn't even, I had no idea what this movie was, and then I saw somebody, one of the stars on one of the talk shows the other night, and they were talking about Bumblebee, and I was like, Bumblebee, they're making a movie about tuna? That's not right. It's about one of the cars Transformers?
Yes.
So Bumblebee is the yellow car in Transformers, and now it has a standalone film.
Correct. And this film is a prequel to all of the films, the five films directed by Michael Bay.
Okay.
Look, the Transformers was a cartoon.
Yes.
It's a big toy line. It was a big thing when I was a kid. I actually thought when I was a kid, I really enjoyed the stories they were telling in the cartoon. And there were comics as well. But when Bay took over and they decided to make films out of these, they were very big.
Loud.
They were very explodey. They were loud. And they were, you know, the one thing that I always felt they did get right was they had Peter Cullen come back and voice Optimus Prime. But other than that, I'm very take it or leave it with all of the Michael Bay Transformers films.
Right.
However, Bumblebee, which is a prequel, it takes place in 1987. It stars Haley Steinfeld. And also John Cena is in this, WWE superstar John Cena.
Sure.
And then, I mean, it's got a lot of unknown actors in this, or actors you might recognize, but they're not big names. So this movie definitely has to, you know, sort of pave its own road. And I think it does very well. It doesn't have the budget of the other Transformers films. But it opens with a solid action sequence during the War of Cybertron. Once Bumblebee arrives on Earth, it focuses a lot more on the human side of the story, meaning the relationship between him and the first person that he meets. And I actually felt like this movie had more heart than its predecessors, which, by the way, it is a prequel to those predecessors. But I felt like this movie actually had a decent enough story to keep me engaged. I thought the action sequences were pretty good, especially the beginning and the end. You know, they ushered me in and they sent me home happy.
Okay.
And then also, it's pretty funny. They actually utilize Bumblebee, the character, quite well for some decent little laughing comedy. And look, hey, sometimes kids are the best audience, all right?
Right.
They can tell you if something's good or bad. I was in a theater with some little kids, you know, sitting a few rows up. They were enjoying it like you wouldn't believe, and they actually watched the whole movie.
All right, so look, that's good.
I can tell you I liked it, but I can also tell you that younger kids, maybe the target audience in a lot of ways, really enjoyed this as well.
Well, that's good for parents who are like, oh, my kids are hounding me to see Bumblebee, and I'll probably sleep through it.
Yeah.
There'll be something in there for the parents to enjoy as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yes.
Right.
Especially because the parents of these kids likely grew up when Transformers was a hot item.
Yeah.
So I think they will enjoy this a great deal, yes.
All right. No Mark Wahlberg, which always makes me sad. Any film without Mark Wahlberg is really not worth seeing, in my opinion, but that's just one man's opinion.
I'm a Mark Wahlberg fan as well. Right. I understand.
Blake Stubbs is with me. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about another surprise this week. But we'll start looking ahead to Oscar nominations, which are coming up. So, Blake, hang on one second.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Even though the sound of it is something quite atrocious, if you say it loud enough, you're always sound precocious. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
That, of course, Julie Andrews in Mary Poppins. We have a new Mary Poppins. Mary Poppins Returns. Emily Blunt playing Mary Poppins. Blake Stubbs is my guest. You've heard him talk about movies here on WGM many times. Blake, I don't know if you've seen Mary Poppins or not. I thought Mary Poppins was going to come out of the gates huge. It actually came out second. Not great. It is a $23 million opening. So, you know, not too good. But were you surprised? Were you surprised, or was it always pretty much Aquaman was going to take this weekend no matter what?
I will say that I was confident Aquaman would take it. I did not think that Mary Poppins Returns would perform the way it did. I actually thought it might be a little bit bigger. You know, it's part of the big Disney machine.
Right, that's what I thought.
It has all the marketing.
Too.
It's got the talent hook. I mean, Emily Blunt is phenomenal. Lin-Manuel Miranda can pretty much do no wrong.
Right.
You know, people love the talent that's on screen. And, of course, there's other actors in the film that are highly recognizable. Colin Firth is in the film. Ben Whishaw is in the film. Emily Mortimer goes on and on and on. So I am a little surprised that this movie didn't perform a little bit bigger. However, look at what it was up against. It's kind of a tough call. I mean, going into it, you had Bumblebee, which didn't perform on a mega scale by any means, but you also had Aquaman, which was a pretty tough machine to stop. So, I'm a little disappointed. I'm not going to lie. A little bit disappointed.
As am I, and I don't know why. I'm not invested in the film, but I thought it was going to come out a little harder. All right, let's talk about the Academy Award nominations will be announced at the end of January, the 22nd of January to be precise. Let's look ahead. What do you think is in store for the Academy Awards this year?
Well, I think that they will probably have at least, I'm thinking 9 nominees for the best pictures. They can go up to 10,
it's
and they might
many.
As well go to 10. It is too many. I highly agree with you, especially when you're like me and you have to see all 10
right.
And be able to talk about them with a good enough window of time to get people in the know, you know, about how that category is going to pan out. However, I think we're going to see some interesting choices this year, mainly because, you know, there was that talk during the middle of the year about how they were going to do a most popular film.
Oh.
And then there was backlash, and then they backed off of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we will see some choices. Like, for example, I wouldn't be surprised if one of the 10 potential nominees, is Black Panther. I thought Black Panther was an excellent film.
Yeah,
in fact,
I did too.
It was, I gave one of my longest but most engaging, I felt, reviews of Black Panther on this very station. I thought that film was cool. I thought that film was a great story. I thought that it was definitely made with a huge audience in mind. It wasn't just made for, you know, to be part of the bigger picture, but it also set things up for where Marvel was going. So I wouldn't be surprised if that movie is considered. Another big one, though, obviously, for me is A Star is Born.
Yeah,
you know, there's a lot of steam for this movie. You've got Bradley Cooper, who I think could end up being, I've lost count of how many nominees he could potentially have, but he's got a writing credit on this movie. He produced it, he directed it, he starred in it. He might have even had a hand in editing it, but I don't know if his name was attached to that. But I think you see where I'm going with that. Like,
yes.
That movie is going to pull in a lot of nominations. In fact, the one that I'm actually I'm hoping for, because I don't think it's a surefire deal, but I've not been looked at like I have two heads when I say this, but I think Sam Elliott for Best Supporting Actor is a solid nomination this year. He had some scenes in that movie that just broke my heart. And also Roma, Alfonso Cuarón's Roma, which is the movie that I've never been told how to watch a movie more than for Roma, because this was a Netflix release. It's had a limited theatrical release. Everyone's saying go see it in a theater, but some people can't see it in a theater. I'm one of those people. I live in Peoria.
Okay.
But, you know, my 65-inch 4K TV is going to have to suffice, at least unless I want to wait. You know, and I might do that because I know that once these get nominated, they do get a theatrical release.
Sure.
Or at least a better frequency of being able to see them. And then, you know, First Man is another one that I think is going to get a lot of attention at the Oscars.
There was a lot of controversy around that one, too, for, you know, leaving certain things out and changing facts and things like that.
Yes. Yeah, and this is the thing. I mean, it's dramatic licensing. It's a dramatization. If you ever, the example I always go to, to make this a comparable thing, because it's a historical representation or dramatization of true events, Frost Nixon. I was actually in a production of that play, and the longer I was with that play, the more I kept reading about the actual things that happened. The play left out so much. It actually changed characterizations of people.
Oh, jeez.
Yes, that is a problem you run into when Hollywood takes hold of a property or a piece, a script. And they can make changes, you know, to better suit the visual storytelling, you know, representation they're trying to make. And the other thing, though, with First Man was it was a good movie. It was one of the better shot films, although I appreciated how aggressive some of the camera work was in it. And at the same time, you know, the sequences when they are actually in space, I really enjoyed those sequences. I thought they were some of the best sequences I saw all year, actually.
Very nice.
So, yeah.
Well, we'll see.
It's going to be an interesting year.
It will.
At least, at the Oscars.
As the nominations come out, we will talk again to get your feelings on who got snubbed, who should have, who deserves to be nominated, all that. Blake, it was a pleasure talking to you, and I know we will talk again soon.
Absolutely, Brian. Thanks for having me.
You're
really
welcome.
Appreciate it.
Take care. That's Blake Stubbs. You can follow him on Twitter at Blake Stubbs. Yeah, easy enough. All right, let's do this. Then it's news time, WGN. Now, if you think Tom played this music just so I could run across a room and leap into his outstretched arms and he could hoist me above his head, first of all, you're giving him way too much credit for his upper body strength. Secondly, that would be completely erroneous. I want to welcome our guest, Frankie Previtt. If you know, you may know Frankie as the frontman for Frankie and the Knockouts, big band in the 80s, number of hits. If that's all you know Frankie Previtt for, you are missing out because the man has a rich history that includes a very, very strong connection to that song. Frankie, thanks for joining me. Good to talk to you.
Brian, thanks for having me. And I never get tired of hearing that song.
No, I can imagine why. So we won't bury the lead. You won not only a Golden Globe, but an Oscar as a writer of that song, Have the Time of My Life, that was featured in Dirty Dancing. That is, congratulations, first of all. That's incredible. And that's got to be something that as a kid in New Jersey growing up, did you ever in your wildest dreams when you first started playing music think to yourself, I'm going to win an Academy Award one day?
You know what? If I said yes, I'd be lying. That what happened to me was beyond my dream. And to win an Academy Award, a Golden Globe, and what I'm really proud of is it also won ASCAP Song of the Year, which means it's the most played song in the world that year. So it blew me away, and it blew, like, it still blows me away to think that happened to me, this kid from New Brunswick.
I got to ask, before we go back into the music career, where's the Oscar now? Do you have it in a prominent place, or are you one of these guys who's too cool to keep it out, so you kind of, it's just in the closet?
No, I'm not very cool. It's out.
Very
you know?
Good. I would have mine out so that everybody comes over and they have to look at it and you go, oh, yeah, did I mention I won an Academy Award?
Well, you know, I call Oscar my manager. So, you know, anytime anybody wants to meet my manager, I just, you know, there he is. He doesn't leave the room, you know.
Now, like as I mentioned at the beginning, people may be familiar with you from Frankie and the Knockouts, you know, a big band in the 80s, Sweetheart, your first big hit. How do you go from that, from fronting a band, to then, you know, Frankie and the Knockouts breaks up, goes away, and then you get called to by a former manager or a former record exec, and he says, hey, Frankie, you want to come and write this song? How does this all play out?
Well, the irony of the whole thing is that the guy that called me was the same guy who closed his label 2 years earlier and sold us to MCA Records, and that would be Jimmy Einer.
Okay.
And so Jimmy Einer closed his label because, you know, his deal with RCA Records wasn't the right deal for him to really promote his group, properly. Mm-hmm. So when we got sold to MCA Records, it was a good move for us because now we still had a label, but the bad news was that MCA thought we should sound like Night Ranger. And I'm like, well, why would we want to sound like Night Ranger? You know, basically, you have them on your label. You know, it's not really where I think Frankie and the Knockouts should be going. And so they tried to bring in, you know, Night Ranger's producer, and they produced a track off the record and sent it out to radio, and radio was not receptive to the song and said, you know, pass. So there's number one reason why I put this new Frankie and the Knockouts box set together, because that third record that nobody ever heard of is in this box set. And there are some really good songs on there that if MCA would have, you know, looked a little deeper and realized there were songs that radio would have embraced, But then the other side of that coin is, if that would have happened and Frankie and the Knockouts would have continued on, I probably would have never wrote Time of My Life, because Jimmy Einer, the guy who closed his label, to answer your question, roundabout story here.
Oh, that's all right.
You know, called me up and said, I have this little movie I want you to write a song for. And I said, Jimmy, I'm really too busy. I'm trying to get another record deal. And he goes, make time. Make time. This is going to change your life. I'm like, yeah, you're going to change my life. Right. And he goes, Frankie, I got a good feeling about this movie. And I said, okay, what's the name of the movie? So he says, Dirty Dancing. And I think, with my hand on my forehead, poor Jimmy's doing porn.
You gotta write a song for some adult cinema.
Exactly. So he goes, no, this is a great little movie. And I think, you know, it's an opportunity. He goes, they've listened to 149 songs and they've turned them all down. So they really need a song. You got 2 weeks. So I actually wrote the song on the Garden State Parkway, exit 140, listening to a cassette that John DeNicola sent me. That's the other writer. Okay. And I'm going, nin, and I'm of my life, nin, and I'm of my life. What the hell am I saying? and I'm scribbling Time of My Life on an envelope. And really, the man upstairs wrote this song because I didn't know what the movie was about.
Well, they don't tell you, they don't give you any synopsis. There's nothing to give you a hint and a direction to write the song.
He gave me a 5-minute description of Baby Meets Johnny and the father doesn't like him, you know, and they're in the Catskills. That's right. What I knew about this movie. And Time of My Life, who knew? You know, when I met Patrick Swayze at the Academy Awards, he was like all over me. Who sang the demo? Who wrote the song? I need to know. And I'm like, what's up, Pat?
Yeah.
And he goes, we really didn't have a song. And we weren't really digging this movie because we didn't have the ending song.
Yeah.
And we filmed out of sequence. We filmed that last scene first. And so we were like, let's get this movie over with. And he goes, that last cassette came in. He goes, and we filmed to you singing and that girl. And I said, yeah, Rochelle Capelli. He goes, you're the only one that did a duet. And when I'm lip syncing in the middle of the song, I've had the time of my life. It's to you singing.
Wow.
And he goes, at the end of that day, we looked at each other and went, oh, my God, what a great ending. Let's go make a movie.
Well, so, yeah, you can't. You can't picture that movie without that song. There's anything else doesn't seem like it would work.
Well, you know what? I have this theory that without Patrick, without Jennifer, without the song, and Eleanor Bergstein's obviously moving her script, mm-hmm. those elements created a phenomenon. And you take one of those elements out of that equation, and you don't have the same ending. You don't have the same phenomenon Dirty Dancing created.
That is exactly right. Frankie Previtt is my guest. We'll talk more about the Frankie and the Knockouts, the complete collection, and more about the process that led to him becoming an Academy Award-winning composer with Time of My Life and the Golden Globe and a Grammy nomination and the ASCAP Song of the Year. It's an incredible career. Frankie, if you can hold on just a minute, we will talk a little more after this. Ah, yes, Frankie and the Knockouts. Frankie Previtt, my guest, the Academy Award-winning composer of Time of My Life, which was recently chosen as one of ASCAP's top 20 songs ever written. You think, Frankie, about all the songs that have ever written, how incredible is it you're one of the top 20 best ever, ever. That's no small feat.
That's still one of those things, like I said, to win an Academy Award and top, you know, 20 songs ever. It's beyond your comprehension when you're a kid, you know, and you're 13, 14, 15 years old, and you're putting a band together and you're singing. To think one day maybe you hear yourself on the radio.
Yeah.
Maybe that would be my dream. Or, you know, maybe one day I would get nominated for a Grammy. But to have all these other accolades and things that happen to me, I'm blessed. What can I say?
And was there one that didn't change? Because I'm imagining as each accomplishment comes, you have to recalibrate those dreams. Like you said, if your first dream was, well, I want to be on the radio or I want to go on tour, I mean, you got those, and then you just have to now start dreaming bigger, I'm guessing.
Well, you know, you start following the dream because now it's being fueled by some success. So it gives you the impetus to want to continue and to look for, you know, other things. And, you know, at the low end of, you know, Frankie and the Knockouts breaking up and me going back home and living in you know, my apartment house that my parents had and lived upstairs, and they had an apartment downstairs. So to move back home after all those years and start over again is humbling.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was selling cars out of my driveway to make a few bucks to pay, you know, my electric bill and my phone bill. And my parents were, you know, feeding me and saying, don't give up the dream. My dad was an opera singer, and my mother and father met taking voice lessons from the same coach. So I had this genetic thing, this genetic seed that was inside of me, and my parents, you know, without them, there'd be no me. So obviously, they gave me the opportunity, and I have to really thank them for that.
Now, you said the time of your life, time of my life, you rode on the parkway at an exit, and it seemed to just come to you. You also wrote Hungry Eyes for the same movie. Did they ask you to do that after Time of My Life? They were like, this song is great.
No.
Let's do Hungry Eyes.
No, not at all. Because when Jimmy Einer called me, Hungry Eyes was already written and was on my demo reel to try to get another record deal.
Oh, okay.
Now, every label turned Hungry Eyes down. Nobody thought that was a good song. And, you know, I thought I had a good song.
Yeah.
And I thought it would be on Frankie and the Knockouts' fourth record, but that never happened. But it found its home. You know, Eric Harmon did a great job on it, and it ended up in Dirty Dancing as Time of My Life's little brother, you know, so to speak.
Now, two songs in one movie is a pretty big achievement, right? Because it's, as you said, they had listened to over, you said, 148, I think you said, songs before you submitted Time of My Life. So to get one in is unbelievable. To get two songs in one film, that's got to be monumental achievement.
Well, you know what, after they realized that I came up with the goods for, you know, Time of My Life, they said, do you got anything else? That's when I sent them Hungry Eyes. And, you know, it just happened to fit that scene where, you know, he's teaching her how to dance.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's another pop song. So it's, and that's what I am. And pop is not a curse word. It means popular.
Right.
So, you know, it's, I'm a pop rock songwriter. And so to write Time of My Life, it was really out of my wheelhouse as a rocker, you know, that was more of a, they wanted it to be, put congas, make it more Latino, you know, I was getting
sure.
all this, you know, kind of input when I sent them the demo, and they said, can you add more congas, and can you, you know, and they ended up, when Bill Medley and Jennifer Warren did it, you know, that voice, especially Bill Medley's, connected a modern, at that time, pop song to 1964, and that was genius.
Yeah, it was a great pairing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Now you are using the original demo recordings of Have a Time of My Life, as well as the Frankie and the Knockouts, the complete collection. You continue to raise money for the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, the
Correct.
Charity in Patrick Swayze's honor by those. That's got to be, it had to be bittersweet, as you said, when Patrick came up to you at the Academy Awards and was so effusive. And now to keep paying tribute to him in this way is, I think, a very wonderful thing.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate it. And everyone, the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network is the largest cancer network for pancreatic cancer, bigger than Love Garden. And what I was told by Pamela Phillips Acosta, that they are the least funded cancer by our government. So I have this theory that if everybody in the world could give a dollar, then we could beat this disease. So my contribution is trying to give back in any little way I can, even by talking about it and making the awareness of the disease to people. And the main thing about that disease is that by the time you realize you have it, it's already too late. So they call it kind of like the silent cancer. Yeah. So they're trying to find the early indications of it, and that's what they're fighting to do.
And people can get the complete collection, Frankie and the Knockout, the complete collection at frankieandtheknockouts.com, correct?
Well, they can actually get it if you go to my Facebook page, just Frankie and the Knockouts, or fridaymusic.com. That's the label it's on.
Okay.
It's through Sony, fridaymusic.com. And, you know, a portion of that goes to the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network. I sell the demos that they filmed the movie to with me singing Time of My Life and Hungry Eyes. All that money goes to the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network. And that's on Dirty Dancing Demos. That's a Facebook page, too. So it's Frankie and the Knockouts on Facebook or Dirty Dancing Demos.
Fantastic. Well, listen, Frankie, there's so much to talk about. We have to talk again very soon because I want to talk to you about the new musical that you created. And
Calling All
Divas. And I want to go back to, you know, you mentioned pop. And, you know, you were not a pop guy. And then you wrote Sweetheart, and that was a pop song. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, which way are we going to go? So we will talk soon in the new year. It has been a pleasure. Thank you for taking some time today. Happy New Year. And we will talk again very soon.
Same to you, Brian, and all the people out in Chicago. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Frankie. Frankie Previtt, you can follow him on Facebook. Again, you can go to there, get all the music, get the Frankie and the Knockouts, the complete collection, all of that coming up. So good to talk to Frankie. We will talk to him again because any successful musician, the stories are unbelievable. So we will get more of those at another time. First, we have to do this. Then it's news time, WGN. Brian Noonan in for Roe and Anna. I'll be with you until, this week and next week with for them. So always a pleasure. Coming up at 7 o'clock, it's Mark Carman and Jerry Nunn. Who knew? Carm making, doing all the work today. He's just nonstop. So Mark Carman, Jerry Nunn after 7 o'clock. We made it through the entire day without talking. You know, you don't like to dwell on the negatives around the holidays. But sometimes, despite people's best efforts, they give gifts that are horrible, would be one way to put it. Inappropriate might be another way to put it. Or just, they didn't put a lot of thought. It just didn't work out. Despite their best efforts, it just didn't work out. And that's what we'd like to, you know, I'd like to hear from you now. You can vent anonymously on the text or on the phone, 312-981-7200. The worst gift you received for the holidays, because I don't know if anybody's going to be able to top this one that I saw in the Tribune. They did a story, the worst gifts boyfriends give to girlfriends. And I don't think anybody could top this. If you can, I would love to hear from you. A young woman had a new boyfriend, and on Christmas he handed her a jewelry box. Now, they hadn't been dating very long, so she was a little put off, a little nervous, because she's like, oh, I didn't really spend that kind of money on you, and now you've given me jewelry. What could I possibly, what could be in here? Well, you know what was in there? A slip of paper. It was a sonogram. But it wasn't her. It was this guy's ex-girlfriend. He had, before he met the girl he was now dating, he had been with his ex, and she was now expecting a baby, and that was him telling her, hey, I'm going to be a daddy. Merry Christmas. Not a good gift. Not a good gift at all. Even taking into account the fact that it wasn't because he cheated on her that he was now being a dad, but he thought this was a good way to tell. This is what I mean about not putting any thought into it. Who thinks that's a good idea?
That can't be true.
They have the names and everything of these people.
And I believe this. I believe that you have an accurate story in front of you, but that just simply can't be true.
You would hope it can't be true, Carm, but come on, you've been out in the world long enough.
Have I? I don't know if I've been on the world that long.
I think you've been. I think you've been around. You've seen a thing or two. You've said a thing or two.
That's a new twist right there, pal.
Yeah, definitely. I had to read this like 3 or 4 times. Going, not because I didn't understand it, but just because I couldn't believe it. And yes, it's so he wanted to keep dating her. She, of course, said no, and they broke up shortly thereafter. But she still. And it would be hard to top it. She still says this is the worst gift she ever received. Now, I don't know. Again, I don't think anyone can top this, but you are welcome to try.
She should actually be thanking her lucky stars, and that was a great gift, even though it was painful.
Well, if you look at it with, okay, now I'm not saddled with this guy who's, knocking women up all over the place and thinking that this is a good idea. He's obviously not very wise when it comes to making decisions.
Anything.
Yeah, anything. Whether it's his romantic decisions or breaking news decisions, none of that. None of that is very good. All right. Scott wants to try to top this. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Brian. This stems from last year, Christmas of 2017, but I have to, at least I can tell people about it and get it off my chest.
Okay, yeah, you can vent.
My wife and I bought her sister and brother-in-law tickets for a Christmas concert. So we had to check with them ahead of time to make sure. We live in Madison, so we had to make sure they could come up and go to the concert with us. I had tickets in the third row for this concert, and they gave me a pair of ugly Christmas socks for Christmas.
So you're upset that the dollar amount was not reciprocal?
Well, even if they would have got me a nice hardcover book, I never wore the socks. I just threw them away. I was so mad.
Wow. So it didn't have to be a present of equal value.
No.
To come back.
Something that might have, they could have got me, I'm a transplanted Illinoisan, so I live in Wisconsin, just a bear sweatshirt or something.
Something that showed a little
thought.
Equal
value. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. No, I'm a big proponent of you have to show me that you put some thought into it. It doesn't have to, dollar value doesn't have to be there. It's just, hey, did you listen when I dropped a hint? Does this gift mean that you actually know me, or is it something that you could have picked up at Walgreens for anybody that you needed a gift for?
Yeah, 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 I agree.
All right, well, Scott, I appreciate the story, and I'm glad you got to vent. It doesn't beat the sonogram, but it's a good one. For you, this was your sonogram. So I accept
wasn't trying to beat anything.
No,
I
understand.
To express myself.
No, you need to listen. That's what I'm here for. I like to give people a place to. You got to get it off your chest, or else it's going to.
Well, I got to tell you, we all appreciate that. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Scott. Happy New Year. All right, I got a text. I got from the 630. I got text from my son Christmas Eve afternoon, rather, asking for gift ideas for me. One, find me a new son. If you're waiting till Christmas Eve afternoon to ask what your parents want, Tom's shaking his head. You can't believe that. The audacity.
That's pretty shocking. I mean, there's a few people that I waited till a little bit late in the game, more distant relatives.
But you're not going to call them on Christmas Eve and let them know that you haven't. Listen, I haven't given any thought to your gift.
You bluff.
Yeah. I've had this for months. He picked an okay top, but it was too small. Kind of wish he'd asked a few weeks earlier. Yes, that's as a parent. Now I will speak only for me. If that was my daughter and she texted me on Christmas Eve and said, "Hey, I don't have anything for you for Christmas. What do you want?" I would just shake my head and I would have that one big tear running down my face because I've obviously done a bad job as a parent.
Get the theme from the original Incredible Hulk TV show.
Yes, exactly.
Really sad music.
And that just follows me along. That's my, because everybody needs a theme song, that would have been my theme song. Somebody asking if this woman in the story who got the sonogram went Lorena Bobbitt on him. I don't believe so. I think they just broke up normally. But we're talking about the worst gifts. 312-981-7200. It is not the beginning. We are almost at the end of the program, but Chicago, always a good choice for bump music. Coming up at 7, Mark Carmen, Jerry Nunn. Or do you say Jerry Nunn and Mark Carmen? I don't know how you guys, how do you decide the billing on that, Carm? I don't want to insult anybody.
Yeah, that's a good question, Brian. We haven't really discussed that. Nunn on the Run, though, is just cooler than Carm is here. So I'm going to go with, let's go with Nunn and Carm.
Nunn and Carm. All right. Well, that's coming up. We're talking about horrible gifts. You ever received a horrible gift, Carm?
Horrible is a little bit harsh, but you know, this particular holiday season, Brian, I was given a gift by my lovely girlfriend.
Uh-oh.
And she got me a Nintendo game system.
Are you a gamer?
See, I'm not a gamer.
Oh!
And, you know, it's just not something that was on the top of the list or in the middle of the list.
Is she a gamer?
And I said, you got this gift for yourself.
Oh, see?
And that was basically the case. So.
I mean, I'll take it off your hands.
See, it's not a bad gift, though. I mean, who complains about a Nintendo other than some jerk like myself?
No,
but I don't
want
to sit there and play games, you know?
If I don't I don't play video games. So if my wife or daughter gave me a video game system, I'm like, do you even know who this was for? Did you, anything, was this just, I don't have a gift, I'm running through Best Buy, all right, I'll get the Nintendo, I've heard of that.
Right, so, you know, and then I guess it was either yesterday or 2 days ago, her brother came over. They were having a grand old time playing Super Mario.
Good for them.
Mario Kart and Mario 3. Like, hey, you want to play? I'm like, eh.
No, I don't.
I mean, not especially. I did give it a spin. I mean, I like video games, don't get me wrong, but I was never a Nintendo guy.
Okay. Oh, and, so she got you the wrong system is what you're complaining about.
Yeah, I mean, if you had busted out like the big Ms. Pac-Man, you know, professional arcade model thing, then now we'd be cooking with gas. But, you know, the Nintendo just, I said, can you ship it right back? She's like, what? I'm like, well, can you?
Wow.
I'm not gonna use it. I mean, I'd rather.
So how does that, see, because I've had those conversations too when I've gotten something. I'm like, you can return this, right? That never goes over well.
That's
something that should sit for a day or two and go, you know what? I appreciate it, but this gift isn't really something I'm going to use. Can we, you know, I exchange it for something?
Yeah, I mean, she was going to throw out the whole box. I'm like, yeah, you might as well keep
that. Yeah, you want to hold on to that. Yeah. Hold on to the shipping receipts.
Right.
That's probably best. It sounds almost like something from the 773. My ex asked for my gift back. She gave it to the wrong boyfriend. Yikes.
Ouch.
That's that's harsh. That is very harsh. I've never had anything that bad, except, and I bring this up every year, much to the chagrin of my wife, who was the perpetrator of this ghastly crime. 1 year, I made the mistake, and this will show how old a reference it is. I made the mistake of mentioning something about a mock turtleneck. And and I saw some silk boxers somewhere, and I went, oh, those are funny. That Christmas, I got 3 mock turtlenecks in like bright fuchsia and other horrible colors, and 3 pairs of silk boxers. That was the Christmas where I went, you know what, we gotta take all these back. Every one of them's going back.
How about the fact that the mock turtleneck was once something that was...
Who's too lazy to fold over a real turtleneck? Is it, you know, that's the question for America.
It's just a bad look.
It was a horrible look. It was almost as bad as the banded collar shirts that I was a big proponent of back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Just not good. But yeah, the mock turtleneck and silk boxers Christmas still goes down in the Noonan household as one of the worst Christmases ever.
Silk boxers are terrible too.
Yeah, what you know,
no,
I'm not,
functionality.
I'm not lounging all day in a very warm climate where I'd just be, you know, in boxers at a smoking gym. Yeah, picture that, Carm. Me just lounging about, lolling about in my silk boxers. Everything I was ever given just flouncing about. Not good. Not a good look. And yeah, you're right. They don't go well under pants. They don't, just not good.
Just a bad scene on many levels.
No absorption.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Just bad.
Right.
Bad, bad, bad. So that was the worst I ever got. They say that women put a little more higher expectation into the gifts they receive, and they read more into what we give them, which is why I learned before I ever made this mistake, I've never given my wife like a microwave or a vacuum cleaner or any of those kind of things for the holidays. I always just, you know, I keep it very personal. I don't want her to think that I'm telling her she's got bad housekeeping tips. Jerry Nunn has walked in. Jerry, I'm sure you probably received nothing but wonderful gifts.
Yeah, I did pretty well. See? A lot of gift cards.
All right.
What do you think of those?
I am not a fan. Oh. It depends. Mm-hmm. If it's somebody very close to me, I might as well just hand you cash. Because it's very impersonal, in my opinion. That's just me. Now, I received a couple gift cards. And, you know, like my niece will give me a gift card for Starbucks. That's fine. That's very nice.
That's what they were, Starbucks.
Yes, that's very nice. Yeah. So I get those. Or from the kids at school, I get some Dunkin' Donut cards. Those are that's fine. Mm-hmm. But if I gave my wife a gift card, mm-hmm. I'd be sleeping in the backyard. There's no... Because that's definitely... I was running through Jewel, and I remembered, oops, it's Christmas. Here's one for Chili's, and here's one for Visa. No.
What about a check? Would you just take a check?
I'd have to ask her where the checkbook was to write it, but, you know, and I'm also not going to give her a wad of cash. Mm-hmm. So here I had this in my pocket. Here, right. Go ahead. So it's about a half inch thick. I don't know what's in there. Could be a lot of singles. Maybe there's a 50. Good luck. Mm-hmm. Good luck. It's like, you know, some sort of gamble. So you like the gift card. You enjoy them?
It doesn't. It's grown on me. I was the same way. I was like, do not give me some kind of... Like, just some money or something like that. Like, I didn't like that before.
Right.
So I want it to be something that they're thinking of you when they're out and about, right?
Well, it depends. Like, my mom gives my brothers and I some cash, which is fine. She, she was Santa for many, many years. She had to be creative back when we were kids. Now, I'm grateful that she, one, still wants to give me a gift after all these years. And two, you know, if she wants to give me cash, that's fine. But I would never, I know people who give their parents cash. Mm-hmm. I would never give. I would go up to my mom and go, "Oh hell! Oh, you gave me a gift. Thanks. Hold on. Run into the bathroom, take that cash, give it back to her. Hey, I got you a present too. Did you break something? Are you all right?
I always break the mics.
What happened?
It happens every
time. You're just flailing around. You get so excited to be in here.
It always happens. It happens all the time to me. It was the crazy thing.
You can sit back a little bit, Jerry. You don't have to, you know, swing on it.
I'm on my toes here.
All right.
Yeah. Cash is for the tooth fairy, right? Not for Christmas.
Cash is. You know, I don't know. Now, again, my daughter received some cash from her uncles and stuff, but she's, you know, just starting out in her career and not making a ton of dough. So for her, cash is nice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because they don't know what she wants.
I had to mail some cash to my dad for his gift. It was like everyone contributes.
Okay.
Because he wanted a certain, do you know what he wanted? Was the Lonesome Dove series on
DVD?
Yeah, he wanted the whole thing.
Okay.
So everyone had to just chip in. So hopefully that's okay with you.
If everybody's chipping in on a gift, that's different than, Dad, here's a 20. Merry Christmas. That's
right.
You're buying him something that he really wants. So that's a whole different kettle of fish.
Got it.
You know.
Okay.
Let's take a break, and then we're going to find out. I hear you. Carmen is working. You guys are, Carmen's in here with you, huh?
Oh, yeah.
All right. He's going to have a lot of hot takes. You know that about Carm?
Absolutely.
Full of hot takes. Yes. Guys, the guy's nothing but hot takes. Nonstop. That's why we love him.